Tree Gaming.
Hey everyone, it's another episode of Glitch Free Gaming. It's episode number 141. Hooray!
Yay!
And we no longer have a record button, apparently. We have an on button.
Change things up. The old recorder kept crashing.
Yes, yes.
To be fair, it kept crashing when we went to, like, over 2 hours recording, so maybe we should just not do that. But just in case...
That's enough.
Yeah, just in case I have downloaded a new recorder, trying it out. If we sound weird, that's probably why. Or, I don't know, Paul's been playing with our voices or something.
Yeah, he's put, like, a robotic filter over it, like a bat suit or something.
Yes.
It's just us this week.
Yeah, no guests.
Yeah, so, which everyone's probably kind of going, well, that's all right now because you've had too many of them. You can never have too many guests, especially our guests anyway.
We've had good guests over the past, like, 3 podcasts as well.
Absolutely.
Fan favorites.
Yes.
Well, 2 of them. Nathan's only been on once before, but 2 of them are fan favorites. People have said they like listening to them.
2 fan favorites and a creepy guy that talks about girls in their underwear.
Yeah, which I think he might be trying to play more of those games, so we're probably going to have more Nathan in the future.
Excellent. If there's a sequel to Mugen Souls, we know who's getting the review copy.
Yeah, me. Wait, what? I'll fight for that one.
Oh, excellent. Let's just do what we do every week and go through what we've been playing and what we've been up to. So what have you been up to this week?
I've been playing some games. I guess I'll start with the main kind of big one. I picked up Trackmania Turbo.
Oh, yes.
Last week, which Trackmania Turbo is really good. Have you played the Trackmania games before?
I have not, no.
Have you seen much about Trackmania Turbo?
I've seen quite a bit of this one.
Okay. Because I think this is, like, pretty much perfect game for you. Just knowing kind of what kind of racing games you like.
Right.
And knowing how much me, you, and Paul all get addicted to the kind of leaderboard ghost thing in racing games. This entire game is that, pretty much. So it's a really arcadey racing game. There's 4 different environments. Each have, like, a different car, but there's just 1 car per environment. And 3 of them are from Trackmania 2. So the weird thing about this game is a lot of it is Trackmania 2, but kind of with nicer graphics, some more polish, and made into a console game. Because Trackmania 2 was only on PC, and it was kind of like the most PC-ass PC game you'll ever play.
Right.
Like, the UI is just a bunch of fucking text around the edges of the screen, things like that. It's, like, super rough, but the people that play Trackmania, like me, kind of don't mind that.
Right.
This is a way more polished, like, kind of user-friendly version of that game. But basically, it's a really arcadey kind of time trials racing game. And it's cool. It's like there's 4 different, like I said, there's 4 different environments. There's Canyon. Oh shit, I forgot them now. There's Canyon, there's Stadium, there's Roller Coaster, and I can't remember what the other one is. It's like, it's another Canyon style one. It's like Desert or something like that.
Right.
It's not Desert. But there's basically these four. 2 of them are kind of more, they give you kind of more like drifty cars, and basically the environment kind of decides what kind of pieces are in the track somewhat. So like the Canyon one has like big concrete kind of structures and kind of tunnels through the insides of like cliffs and things like that.
Right.
Stadium is kind of inside a stadium, so it's got a bunch of like crazy actual kind of track style things.
Right.
But also the stadium car is like a Formula One style car. So it's super grippy, doesn't drift at all. And it's probably my favourite of them, actually, because it's still super arcadey, so you're kind of almost always holding down the accelerator. But, you know, you're trying to take corners really, you know, really well and cut, like, seconds off of your time and stuff like that. The other cars are a bit more drifty. The roller coaster environment is the one new environment. The other 3 were in Trackmania 2. But it's also probably the craziest because all of these games have always had really crazy track designs. So they're not just, simple ovals or, kind of, more elaborate racing tracks. There are some of those things, but then also a bunch of them just have like random kind of crazy ramps that will send you flying up places, and they need really precise jumps and things like that. And it's just insane. Roller Coaster adds something that's kind of been in it before, where there's always been these kind of big metal kind of like loop-de-loops and stuff like that. Roller Coaster kind of expands on it and adds the kind of the Wipeout style like magnetic tracks, so you can make just entirely like sideways tracks and upside down tracks and things that spiral round and things like that, and they're completely fucking insane. But it's weird. It's just such a fun racing game, just at its core. Like the racing and the driving and stuff is just fantastic. And there's just like a crazy amount of content in it. It's a relative cheap game. It was 25 before launch, and as games tend to do these days, it went up to, I think, about 30 in most places after launch, but it'll probably fall again.
Well, here's something interesting. I was just looking. I thought, I wonder how, if it's still available on how much it is on the store. It's no longer on the PSN store.
That's strange.
Yeah, I couldn't seem to find it.
It's weird. It might be just buried under stuff because there was a beta on there as well, and it was getting
No,
confused between them.
I did a search.
All right.
Yeah.
That's weird then. Maybe there was something up with the digital version. I bought it
Yeah.
on the US store.
All right. Well, it's available. You can get it. You're right, on Amazon right now. You can get it for $24.99.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's definitely worth that. There's a stupid amount of content in it because basically the way Trackmania games have worked in the past is that these environments have came out as their own separate games. So you had like Trackmania Canyon, you had Trackmania Stadium, you had the other one that I keep forgetting the name of. It's going to annoy me now. But they came out as their own separate games. They had like, I don't know specifically, there's like 100 or so kind of tracks made by, maybe not quite that many, but there's like a good number of tracks made by the developers that are kind of in the game. And this one basically has all of those tracks, or at least it seems like all of them. Might just be like a cherry picked kind of best of each one. But at the very least, I am recognizing tracks that I saw in Trackmania 2. And to be fair, they do tend to be the tracks that I really liked in Trackmania 2. But they have this the single player mode that has like this stupid amount of content, just this crazy number of tracks, and they all have leaderboards. You can race against. It's entirely ghost based. Like you're never racing against AI. You race against like the silver leaderboard ghosts or the gold leaderboard ghosts or your friend's leaderboard ghosts. So if I hit a
I don't
time,
know if I like that.
is it makes sense when you play the game, because the tracks are so insane that if there was any collision, it would be unplayable. Like it is a almost like Trials. Like Trials did have multiplayer at some point, but it was all in separate lanes. But imagine Trials if there's multiple bikes going at the same time. Like it'd be fucking insane, right? That kind of thing. And also one of the main draws, at least for me, has always been the multiplayer. So on PC, Trackmania has always had multiplayer servers where there are hundreds of cars all driving at once. Like hundreds of players in the one server just going nuts and setting their times, and you're competing against them. And again, if there was any collision on the cars, hundreds of cars going around these relatively small tight tracks would be unplayable.
But
So
you can see the other cars at least.
Or you can turn them off if you don't want to, if you just want to, if they're distracting you and you want to, get the best time. But you can, you by default, you see the ghosts of everyone else in the server. So this is the first time they've done it on console. There was a Wii game, but as far as I'm aware, it didn't have this multiplayer stuff. But yeah, they've changed it a bit because it's not, they're not doing the The weird thing in Trackmania 2 on PC and Trackmania 1 on PC was that the online worked with dedicated servers where you go on and you pay for a server and you can install a bunch of mods and shit onto that server. And most of them were UI mods. Some of them were just weird shit like, you know, I want this music to play. And so you had a bunch of servers just playing really shitty dubstep and stuff like that, which was great. They don't have that on consoles.
Right.
I'm not sure if the PC version of Trackmania Turbo has that either. But they've kind of polished and, you know, kind of simplified the whole getting into games kind of thing. So you're not just... It's still just a server browser, but they kind of... They have a lot of tags and stuff like that to let you know, like, this is the kind of tracks that are on the server. This one's just got a bunch of really dumb fucking jumps. This one's just got proper racing tracks. This one's got, you know, full speed tracks, which basically mean you'd never let go of the accelerator. You know, as long as you're hitting the corners correctly, you don't ever need to let go.
Right,
that
okay.
kind of thing. Or random tracks, which is also good. But it's got this kind of room system, which I assume it's a dedicated server as well, because it runs when... It must be a dedicated server, actually, because it runs when you're not on. So you can create a room, and you set the tracks that you want to play in that room, and then people can join it, and it can be up to 120 players, I think, is the upper limit.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and then you see all their ghosts going around, and it makes the leaderboard of the people playing at a time, and, you know, ranks everyone as they're playing.
Oh, right, okay.
And it's just super fun. It's one of those games that you can just kind of pick up and just go, I'm just going to play it for, you know, 20 minutes and just do a handful of tracks. And it's like, basically it sets a time limit of 5 minutes per track by default. You can change it, but I've been jumping in and out of servers and everyone just seems to leave it at default. So it's like 5 minutes per track, get the best time you can get in 5 minutes. Whoever gets the best time in 5 minutes is the winner, and they kind of get ranked on a global leaderboard and you can move it up and down in that.
Right, okay.
It's just super fun. But the other main thing about the game, the series, really, has been user-created tracks.
Right, okay.
So, in the past, because it's been on PC, they've had, you know, a really in-depth track editor or track creator. And it has been... Like, you can do completely nonsensical things with it. It's been kind of impenetrable if you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Like, it's almost, like, not quite. It's, like, a really simplified, like, game engine, almost. Like, it's... You're still limited to the pieces they give you. It's, like... I guess it's split into pieces. Like, you get pieces on, essentially, a grid, and you can place them. But on console, they've made some changes to that stuff. So, for starters, they have a randomize button.
Right.
So you can just hit random, it just generates a random track. And you need to validate it before you can upload it and put it on, like, your server or your room. But if you have already played through the stupid number of tracks that are in the game, or, you know, just want to see some crazy things, you can just hit the randomize button and it will just generate a random track.
Oh,
and so
okay.
You can just have random tracks. And from my experience, most of them tend to work out pretty well. It's never, in my experience, made a track that was, like, unplayable, unfinishable. Sometimes they'll make ones that are really weird, like they'll put, like, a boost pad at the starting line and then, you know, a 90-degree turn, so you just slam straight into the fucking corner. That can be fun on its own. There's definitely tracks like that on servers, and you go on and you find you're on a 100-person server and everyone starts and hits the boost button, then all slams into the corner and you see 100 cars all slamming into this corner. That stuff's pretty good. But then the track editor itself, they've added basically difficulty levels for the track editor. So there's like an easy, a medium, and an advanced. And the easy track editor literally just gives you a starting line, and then you can select from like a list of pieces and it will slot it onto the next bit.
Oh, kind of like a jigsaw?
Yeah, basically. It'll connect it up to the next bit. Or more like it's like a Skeletrix set almost.
Oh, right, okay,
like,
yeah.
Like, it will just, you select the bit, it slots on, select the next bit, slots on, select the next bit, slots on, and they all slot on together, and then you can make a little track out of it.
Right.
The medium editor, which is the one I've been using, because I've actually made a handful of tracks on it already, is interesting because it's got a mix of that, so you can do that if you want. You can just slot them on together, or you can click in the left stick, which disconnect you from that track. So then you can make jumps, basically. In the easy one, it's impossible to make jumps. But on medium, you can disconnect from track and then place your next piece slightly further away or something, or, you know, the other side of the map
below,
and make something
or,
silly.
Yeah,
exactly. So you can make really silly jumps. And that's the version of the editor I've been using the most, because it seems like you get enough control that you can make kind of really cool, silly things,
mm-hmm.
but it's still kind of easy to use.
Yeah.
And then there's the advanced editor, where you can properly like cut out pieces of the terrain. Because by default, basically, you have like a, they have like four, roughly four presets for the kind of environment. So you'll have like a choice of like, this is the flat grassy area you can build your track on, or this is the stadium has one that has like a bunch of kind of neon towers in the middle of it and stuff like that. So you have to build your track around those.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of, you get those kind of things. And the advanced editor, you can go in and you can be like, okay, I started this flat grassy one, but I think I want to put a mountain here, so I'm going to build that. But I've not really messed with that one too much yet, because it seems way more complicated. But it's cool, the options there.
Cool.
So it's really easy to make custom tracks. And then you can upload them and put them on your room. And then where some of the tracks sharing stuff gets a bit iffy, because it's kind of difficult to find tracks. You can't name your tracks, which is bizarre.
Okay, that's a bit strange, yeah.
Yeah, it basically automatically names them. It gives it your username, the environment that you pick, so like canyon or stadium or whatever.
Right.
And then you choose a tag based on what kind you think it is. So, you know, like a full speed racing game, full speed race track, or standard race track. One of them's just LOL, which they give little descriptions for these to kind of help you choose the right one. So like LOL just says, you know, like, this is a kind of gimmicky track that relies on one kind of silly piece, and then the rest of the, once you've mastered that, you've mastered the track. So basically it's for ones that have really silly jumps and stuff like that in them.
Right.
Like one of the tracks I was playing online, because my favorite thing in these games has always just been jump on random servers, see what tracks are playing. One of the tracks I played was one that was just a straight line with a bunch of boost pads, and then a ramp at the end, and a kind of like dip before that. And you're going so fast that you didn't fall into the dip, you just kind of skimmed over it and hit the edge, and then started spinning and hit up the ramp.
Right.
And the speed you're going at kind of fires you up the ramp, and then there's like, you know, kind of 10 or 11 kind of finish lines floating in the air, and you've got to try and aim yourself into one of them. And it's just nonsense. And so you just see, again, like 100 people in the server all flying through the air trying to get through these finish lines.
Right.
And it's nonsense. It's complete silly. And that would be like an LOL track. And there's like a bunch of other little things. So the name automatically chooses those things and then just gives you a number based on what number of tracks you've made. So like if it's your first track, it'll say like, you know, Proto Me, Canyon, LOL 1. And
all
that's
right,
the name of your track.
Wow.
But then when you go into the, you can open up a list of tracks. If you go into the, there's an arcade mode, which mm-hmm. is its own thing that has a ton of bizarre things in it. But you can go into the tracks on that, and you can just select online tracks. It seems to just pick up the most the latest ones. But it doesn't show, once you've hovered over them, it shows the full name with like the username and the tags and stuff like that on it. But by default, it just shows the number and like a little screenshot, which by default, the screenshot is kind of isometric view of the track that you're looking at. But
all
it's
right,
still
okay.
Just like a list of tracks. It's bizarre to see, like, it's a weird thing to look at, especially given how polished like the rest of the game is, to look at this list of tracks that is just like, oh, that's track 3, 4, 9, 7, 103, 44. And it's like, what?
Yeah, that is... Yeah,
it's weird. But on the other hand, if you're jumping onto random servers like I do, it's pretty easy to favorite a track. Like if you're on track, you just pause the button, hit favorite, and it adds it to your favorites, and then you can go into arcade mode and race
right.
it again on your own, or you can add, You can add the room as a favorite as well, or you can make your own room and have, that in the.
Right, so you can find it quite easily
Yeah,
once you've.
exactly. Once you've done it, once you've raced it once, it's easy to find again.
Right, okay.
So, I've got a bunch of favorite tracks that are just like a bunch of nonsense that might want to play again at some point.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm aware, those all have leaderboards as well. I'm not sure how the ghosts work on that stuff. I've not really messed with the arcade mode yet, because again, I've mainly been playing online.
Right.
But there is an arcade mode where you can go in and play specific tracks, even like the campaign tracks, which is kind of weird. I don't know why you'd go in there rather than just go into the single player bit, but you can go into the arcade mode and play that. But yeah, it's just stupid amounts of fun. People are making really crazy tracks for it already. It's really easy to jump in servers and find just nonsense tracks. Like I was saying, the one where people are just firing themselves into the air is bizarre. A lot of them are weird, silly jumps. I was actually playing it slightly before, just before we started recording, and found a track that was just, it was a maze. Like, someone had just built a track out of trees and then had a road between the trees, and it split off into multiple different paths multiple times. And one of the cool things about how Trackmania works is you have checkpoints and you have the finish line. And you can't go through the finish line until you've hit every checkpoint. By default, this is fine because you're just going around the track and you're hitting all the checkpoints. So that's how it works. And you can restart from the start of track or from the last checkpoint. But when people make really silly tracks, it means they can do things like make a maze where they've hidden checkpoints throughout the entire maze. So you might find the finish line right at the start and not be able to finish because you've not found any of the checkpoints. And it's just this weird thing where it's like a race around this maze trying to find checkpoints. It's bizarre. There is nothing like it on consoles. There's a lot like it on PC now because, like I said, Trackmania has been split up into several different, environments, and there were two, there's Trackmania and Trackmania 2, and each of those had multiple environments. So there's a lot of Trackmania out there. But on consoles, this is the one. This is like the one time that they've kind of properly put the effort in to try and put it on consoles, and it works just perfectly. It's graphically the nicest looking that Trackmania has ever looked. UI-wise, it's like the sleekest looking it has ever looked. And in terms of the craziness, like everything you want is still kind of there. So yeah, it's fun. If nothing else, like I'm gonna play a crap ton of it. But I've opened up a list of all the games. I'm trying to open up a list of all the games in the Trackmania franchise, and there is a lot of them. So let me try to find the easy way to look at this. Because there is Trackmania Sunrise, Trackmania Nations, Trackmania United, which is kind of. So the Formula One style car for Trackmania is kind of the most popular in a lot of ways. And that is largely because Trackmania United used it. And Trackmania United was free to play. So. Yeah, so the one car it had was the Formula One track and car, and it had the stadium stuff, and that was kind of. Which is it's cool. There's Trackmania DS and Trackmania Turbo DS, which is an entirely different game that just happened to have the same name. Trackmania Wii, Trackmania 2, Trackmania 2 Canyon, Trackmania 2 Stadium, Trackmania 2 Valley. Valley's the other one I'm trying to remember. And then Trackmania Turbo, which has all three of those and also the roller coaster thing. So, yeah, it's just insane. There's tons of Trackmania out there. But.
Well, you're slowly selling me on it.
I do think you'd like it, is the thing. I think that it's kind of super fast paced in the way you'd like. It's got the kind of leaderboard challenge stuff in the way you like. And it's one of those things, like, I say, if nothing like Trackmania kind of on consoles, there's not a lot of arcade racing games anymore in general. It's kind of a dying breed, especially since, like, we'll get to news later, but you know, Evolution got shut down recently. Drive Club is, and even then, like, it's not really comparable to Drive Club, because Drive Club still had that kind of weighty, kind of leaning towards simulation feel to it, kind of like Codemasters games do. But Trackmania Turbo is, like, arcadey in the proper kind of old-school arcadey way. It's super fast-paced, super silly. It's really good. I think you would definitely enjoy it. It's just, you know, its own weird, crazy thing, and I'm so happy that it exists. So yeah, I played a lot of that over the weekend. And I,
yeah, it does. Yeah, I seen the, you know, you put a couple of videos up, and I seen one. And I'm actually watching one the now, and it's that one where you're getting launched in the air.
It's so good. And there are proper racetracks as well. There are people that are into the kind of silly, goofy things like I am. But there is also, like, people just making, like, really good, solid racetracks. Just, like, really good, just if you want to, you know, be the best fucking racing driver ever, they will make that track that you can get good at. Like, there is a whole, there's been a real weird, like, crazy, in-depth esports scene for the Trackmania games in the past. So, like, it's weird. It's this weird racing game that kind of covers tons of different bases and kind of nails all of them.
Yeah.
While being its own goofy little thing that, up until now, has been a relatively niche thing. And, like, Trackmania 2 was, Trackmania 2 was great, but the splitting things into different environments didn't work as well for that game. It kind of just split the user base in a weird way, so that, you know, Trackmania Valley came out first, I think it was, and then after Stadium came out, no one played Valley anymore.
Right.
And then when Canyon came out, people still kind of stuck with Stadium, so no one played Canyon.
Right.
And then
right.
Stadium went free for a wee while. And I think you can still actually get a free version of Trackmania 2 Stadium. And so everyone plays Stadium. And they kind of got to the point where they kind of said, like, if you own all of them, you can have a server that runs all of the different tracks, and it'll switch between styles. And Turbo kind of just has all of that anyway. Like, you buy the one game, it has everything.
Yeah. Now, what are... Yeah, the price point, I think, is quite good, but I don't know whether I don't know, I'm still a little bit torn.
So I was a bit iffy on the price to start with. Before it came out, I was like, I don't know if I would pay that much for Trackmania. Like, I paid, I think I paid 15 for Stadium, for Trackmania 2 Stadium. And it had a decent amount of content, but it felt like a bit too much money for it, because it was very much, like, the single player content was there, but it didn't seem super great. And it was just, join people's servers and play all this user made stuff. I feel like the users are doing most of the development in a lot of weird ways. And it's like, the weird way of, something that's so mod heavy and so, you know, kind of user driven, it feels weird to be paying so much for it. I don't know how to, like, describe it. It seems weird.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But Trackmania Turbo has, like, a crazy amount of content that you could sit and play single player and enjoy. Like, I've actually played a lot of the challenge mission stuff just myself, just because it has been that fun. And then it's also got a bunch of local multiplayer stuff that I've not actually tried yet, but I watched some videos of, and it's insane. Like, more so than the game in general is. So, like, from what I've seen, there's a split-screen kind of multiplayer, or there's kind of, you know, time trial stuff, so you take turns and pass and play, basically. Pass the controller back and forth, and whoever gets the best time wins. But then there's this weird option in the local multiplayer, where it's like, remember Mortal Kombat when the loading screens came up and you could hit, both players could hit, like, three different buttons, or you could change the code that was underneath the loading screen three different ways, and then if they lined up correctly, it'd be its own separate thing. So it's kind of got that, but it's only three buttons and it's only one player doing it. But you hit in this little code before you start a local multiplayer, and every single one seems to give back something. Because I went in and just hit some by random and just to see what showed up. And there's just a bunch of different, like, variations of the game like kind of
Okay.
hidden in there, and there's just like tons of different variations that you can play. And there's also a thing they call Double Driver, which is insane. It's two players control. It's like Twitch plays Pokemon, but for Trackmania, for a super fast paced racing game.
Right, okay.
So two different players have controllers, and they both put in kind of. They point the analog stick in the way they would want to turn the car if they, you know, when they're controlling the car. And it averages out what both players are doing and then turns the car that way. So if you're like completely in sync with the person you're playing, you could do like the most perfect fucking run in a game, in a track, and be like, yeah, I fucking nailed it. I finished the track in 5 seconds. It was great.
All
Or
right,
you could
okay.
just slam into walls over and over because you. Neither of you are listening, and you're like, no, I want to drift now. No, drifting, just turn the other way, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I've not tried it out myself yet, I've only watched videos of it, but it looks insane and it looks really fun.
Yeah, that would be quite good to get, you know, kind of people that like racing games and just together in a room. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I would like it if they had some kind of multiplayer for that. Just randomly connect, like, matchmake with people online and just try and control their car.
Oh.
But it'd be unplayable.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if it was a thing. So yeah, like I can understand being tepid about the price, and I think it will probably go on sale at some point. Like the Trackmania games in the past have always kind of dropped in price pretty quick.
Yeah, I do. I really do fancy it. So, yeah, I'll see how it goes. I have got plenty to play at the moment as well.
Yeah.
So,
That's understandable.
yeah.
I do highly recommend it though. It's a really fun racing game. The most fun I'm having with racing games at the moment in general. Like I played a bit more Drive Club recently, and I played Burnout Paradise again recently, stuff like that. But Trackmania Turbo is what is keeping me going in terms of racing games.
Right, okay.
Also play some Project Cars. That's a good game.
Project Cars.
Yeah, I like
If
Project
only
Cars.
it came, you know what? If only it came out when it was meant to. That's
Yeah, I
the
think that's
only
what
thing
we
about it,
know
yeah.
before.
Although you've just reminded me I need to play more of Forza, because that is a
Yeah,
it's a stunning game as well.
I need to buy an Xbox One. I need to Forza Horizon 2. And
Oh.
the inevitable Forza Horizon 3 this year.
Oh, it
Because
has to. It has to come.
it's every other year, right? That's how it works.
But we can hope. But you do need to get Forza Horizon, then you do need to buy that off-road island pack.
Yeah, I've heard good things about
Because if you're like me and you're missing the original two MotorStorm games,
it.
then you know that this is it's a step in the right direction for it. Not as crazy physics or anything like
Yeah.
that, but
If you like crazy
still.
physics, let me tell you about
Excellent.
Trackmania.
Well, you been playing anything else?
Yeah, actually, I bought the one of the founder packs for Paragon.
Oh, yeah.
So, Paragon is Epic's free-to-play MOBA that is currently in like the earliest of early access.
Yes.
But it's out on PS4, but you can't play it unless you can download it for free. But you can't actually play it unless you buy one of their founder packs,
Right,
which
okay. You
I
did.
didn't actually pay attention to what it gave me. It gave me like a couple of character skins or something.
Right, okay.
It was like
But it,
15 quid. It basically gets you into the game.
I was going to say it essentially lets you play the thing.
Yeah, it's basically buying it early access.
All right, okay.
So I played a handful of games of that over the weekend. So it's very early, is the main thing. There are tutorials in there, like really basic tutorials per character. But they're just YouTube videos. They're just links to YouTube videos. Just opens up the web browser.
Oh, wow.
Like it's, you know, it's super early,
There you go. Fair enough.
but it's interesting. It's way more of a MOBA than I thought it would be. It's more way more like Dota or League of Legends.
Right, okay.
I've not played. I mentioned last time. I've not played Smite in a long time, but I was playing with Nathan actually, and Nathan has played a lot of Smite, and well, he's played a decent amount of Smite, and he was like, "This is way slower and way more tactical and way more like it's way less of an action game." Which is interesting, because it is like it's an Epic game. It looks like an Unreal Engine game. It looks like Unreal Tournament, but it's, you know, this big 3-lane map that has these AI creeps kind of, you know, fighting each other through it, and your hero characters fight against each other to try and push your creeps forward to take out the towers and, you know, destroy the enemy's core, basically.
Right,
It's
okay.
like how every MOBA works. And it's interesting because there's, I'm not quite sure how many characters. There's not a massive amount of characters just now, but there's a decent number of them. They all play completely differently. And it's like proper MOBA style. They have, you know, five or six different abilities that are mapped to different buttons in the controller. As you level up in a game, which you're leveling as, you know, round based, you know, every time you play a game that you start from level 1 and you level up to level 15, and then after that game you're level 1 again. And as you level
Right.
up, you dump points into your abilities and you use money to buy. Usually in these games you use money to buy eight items. They have this weird system that I'm not super sure I'm fond of, where instead of items you have a deck of cards. And so you can
Okay.
customize your deck of cards and you can buy more decks of cards with real money, perhaps. And it's an interesting concept because the cards are basically equipment. So you'll get, you know, like health potion cards. And if you equip health potion cards, then every time you return to base, you will get three health potions to carry around with you. And then when you use them, you have to go back to base and refill. One card gives you all those. And also cards are reusable. So it's not like you use a card and it's gone like some games do. So you make your deck and it has like, you know, health potions or mana potions, and it has equipable things, like you get a spear, which doesn't show, you know, like aesthetically, it just has a stat boost, basically. And you want to build up decks per character to kind of, you know, boost their stats in the way that you would play those characters. And so you can make up multiple decks for different ways of playing characters. You could be like, this is my, you know, super defense heavy deck for this character, or this is my, you know, kind of super DPS heavy thing, or this one has tons of cooldowns, so I can use my skills
Right,
constantly
yeah.
if I'm playing a mage, that kind of thing.
Right.
And it's an interesting system, but I've not got super into it because it's weird. It's like they took a thing I really like, which is MOBAs, and they took a thing that I really don't like, which is deck building. And, well, I say that. I like deck building games. I've come around on them recently, mainly through
Yeah.
things like Paperback and stuff like that.
Yeah,
But
but I think what you mean is kind of like collectible card building,
yeah,
that kind
exactly.
of, yeah.
Like when I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh, the bit where I got bored of it was when I had to build my own deck. The reason I stopped playing
Yes.
Hearthstone was the bit where it became impossible to kind of just use the kind of deck building wizard that was built into it, and I had to sit and actually
Yeah.
think about building my own deck.
Kind of what put me off most of them, those types of games as well.
So far, Paragon stuff seems a lot more basic than that. But also, there doesn't seem to be a massive like variety of cards yet, either because I haven't bought a bunch of them or because it's in early access.
Okay.
So it seems pretty easy to just be like, you know, these are the two pieces of equipment that give me faster attacks and more damage. So I want to play as a character that has a bow, and generally rangers in games are DPS heavy, and so I'll choose those two things and put them in my deck because they give me faster attacks and more damage. And that
Right.
has been working out fine for me so far, and it's actually quite an interesting system, but I'm still not super sold on it. But like the game itself is like Dota and stuff like that, it's a super kind of strategic kind of slow pace. It takes a lot of hits to take out another player kind of thing. But it is over the shoulder third person aiming, like a third person shooter. And you're aiming your attacks, you're aiming your skills and stuff like that. And there's a lot of things that you can just straight up miss, which is something that happens with some things in Dota, but not other things. But a lot of the time, like, you could just miss your regular attacks, which is not really a thing in, you know, RTS style MOBAs. And
Right.
it's interesting. I've enjoyed it so far. Like, it does a smart thing of forcing you to play, I can't remember how many matches, you have to play like 4 or 5 matches against the AI before it lets you play against other people, because it, you know, forces you to learn the game slightly, at least learn how to play MOBA slightly. But again, there's no tutorial, so it doesn't really teach you anything. It just says fight the AI multiple times. It doesn't matter if you win or lose, you just have to fight them. But generally you get players that will be like, you know, you can learn from. Yeah. And it's really slow, but it's still really strategic, while adding this kind of shooter layer to the whole thing. So it's, I don't know, it's fun. I'm enjoying it, but I'm still not super sold on it.
All right, yeah.
But it is, it's good. It's also, it's Unreal Engine 4, and it's, you know, Epic's kind of big showpiece for Unreal Engine 4, and so it looks stunning. It runs like perfectly. And when I say that, I know I keep saying this feels like it's, you know, super early in terms of early access. I don't mean that in terms of, like, bugginess. Because I mentioned this on Facebook, and someone was like, oh, so you're saying it crashes a lot. It's like, no, I've actually not encountered any bugs. Like, at most, maybe, like, an animation bug where and a character runs backwards. And it's like, that's, you know, like, a really minor, minor thing. Everything else, like, has been super solid, you know, not buggy or anything like that.
Right, yeah. It's what you mean is that it's light on its features.
Yeah, like, it's super light. Like, again, there's no tutorial stuff, which it feels like it should have.
There's
one map, which isn't really that big a deal. Like, Dota 2 has one map. But that's kind of because it's got the legacy of, you know, being Dota. And Dota was this... Dota was a map. Dota wasn't a game. It was literally a map for Warcraft 3. And this only has one map, and it's... Actually, it may have two maps that just feel very similar now I think about it. I always say there's only one map, though. But the thing is, these games always have, like, a... They have, like, 3 lanes where, you know, you have 2 towers either side for each team, and, you know, the AI goes down these lanes and fights each other in the middle, and depending on how, you know, that battle goes, they'll push forward or push back or just die in the middle. The thing that all these games also have is what's referred to as jungle. Sometimes it's literally a jungle, and this one is kind of more like a little foresty jungly thing. Some games it's just, you know, like Awesome Knots had one, and it's just like a kind of central area that's like has AI creatures that kind of hang out there of varying levels that you can use to kind of grind and level up outside of kind of the main battlefield. And that one of the main super early things about Paragon is if you go into those areas, they have the enemies there, and they're there and they do damage and stuff like that, and you can fight them and grind and level up, but they don't have models for them yet, so they're just these placeholder textureless kind of blobs that have literally just have a label above them, just a bit of text above them that says alpha content. It's like, what? Right. It's amazing that is in this still when you've let people start playing it, but it's completely playable. It's the thing, it doesn't actually change the gameplay. It's just a really silly thing to look at, especially compared to, like, the whole game is like graphically super polished and super pretty and stuff like that, and then you see these like kind of textureless blobs kind of hanging out there that say alpha content above them.
Right.
So it's just bizarre. And like I said, it's kind of light on content. There seems like a decent number of heroes just now. I'm not sure how they're going to be handling heroes in the future. At the moment, there's 3... Because you have like an overall kind of account level that goes up as you win matches. And so...
Right, okay.
When your account level hits 7, you unlock 3 additional heroes. So there's a decent amount of them, and they're all unlocked. But the reason I'm not sure about it is League of Legends has like 100 or so, probably more than 100 or so at this point, heroes... but it switches out which ones are kind of the free roster. So it's like, these are the ones you can use just now for free. I think Heroes of the Storm is the same as well, where these are the ones you can use for free. After a few weeks, we'll switch them out with these ones that are free. You can't play those ones you're playing as before unless you pay money to play as them permanently. Dota 2 does it where Dota 2 has a stupidly massive roster of heroes, and you can play as whatever one you want. And they make all their money by selling cosmetic items for those characters. Paragon seems to be leaning into their card system for the money. And I think there are some cosmetic stuff as things as well. So not that cosmetic stuff's in just now, as you'd probably expect, like if they haven't finished modeling, you know, important AI characters on the map, they haven't started, you know, modeling the kind of different costumes for the characters yet. But I'm unsure if that means that they are, this is the way the game is always going to be, where you have all of the characters unlocked and then you, they are making money by selling you costumes for those characters, or if this is just for the early access thing, and when it comes out and it's proper free to play, you know, this will be the free to play characters and they'll swap them in and out. But I guess that's just too early to kind of tell. It's entirely possible. Like, I've not done much research on Paragon. I've kind of just saw a couple of videos, thought it looked pretty, and bought it.
Right, okay.
Which is definitely not the way to buy MOBAs. Don't ever do that, people. because I know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people online that, because I did start looking into it a little bit after I kind of, you know, started playing it. Because I was like, this is actually kind of cool. I wonder what other people think of it. And, you know, there seems to be not a massive amount of people playing it, but the people that are playing it are kind of into it. And
yeah.
There's a handful of people that are just like, I bought this game because it's an Epic game. It looked like Unreal Tournament, and it was this kind of team-based shooter thing. And it's like, no, it's really not. If you play this as a shooter, you'll die over and over, and people will shout abuse at you, and you'll lose the game for your entire team. Like we explained feeding on the podcast last week.
Yes.
But
yeah.
It's like, that is very much a thing in this game. You will level up the other team to the point where they will destroy you over and over and over. And so it's interesting because it does that, and it's, at face value, it looks like a third-person shooter. And sometimes that's to its detriment because some of the characters, one of them has, it's the one I've seen the most complaints about, actually. One of them has two pistols and he kind of runs around like gunslinger style, just, you know, shooting his two pistols at people. But it's a MOBA, so you can't really shoot that fast. So kind of shooters have always taught us at this point, like, if you've got two pistols, you're shooting them really quickly because that's what you do.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
That's how shooters work. And this isn't a shooter, so you run around with two pistols and it's like, bang, bang, bang. It's like, oh, that's way slower than I would have expected. And then again, you upgrade your character as you go, and eventually he is actually shooting pretty fast, but it's just, you know, a weird disconnect.
Right.
So yeah, I'll probably check in on Paragon, you know, a few more times in the future on the podcast.
Right.
But I am enjoying it so far.
Good.
I don't know if I'd recommend buying into the early access build for it just now, because it seems, like I said, very light on content, very, you know, light on finishedness.
Right.
Which is definitely a word. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe avoid buying for now, but keep an eye on it if you're into MOBAs, because it's a good one.
Right, okay.
Other than that, I played A Story About My Uncle.
Yes.
Which we will discuss on the podcast next week.
We will, yes.
Which is, I really liked it. Spoilers. Spoilers for next week's podcast. I really liked that game. I don't know why I hadn't played it until now. That game is like, yeah, we'll talk about it next week. It's really good. People should play it and then listen to us talk about it next week. And I played, what's I play? I played some board games.
Okay.
Just a couple though. Paperback, which I've talked extensively about on this podcast before. We played with, I'm trying to remember, we played with a different rule. We played with a theme rule, which the theme rule is basically brief description of people somehow have missed me talk about Paperback a billion times on here before. Paperback is like Scrabble meets deck builder. You're building up a deck of cards that are all letters and combinations of letters, and then you draw five every turn and you're writing a word with them that, you know, gives you points, and then you try to buy the point cards and make your deck worth lots of money, basically. So the theme rule is that if you write a word that is related to whatever the theme card says, and it gives some suggestions, but also the rule is just as long as everyone agrees that is related to the theme,
right,
you get that card. And the the card can go back and forth throughout the game if someone else kind of writes a word of the theme. So it's just whoever was the latest one to do it, basically. And that card is worth 5 points at the end. So when the game ends, whoever has that card has a major advantage, basically. And the one we had was Dystopia.
Right.
So we had like any words that kind of fit a dystopian future. So like someone, I think Leanne wrote surveillance. I'm like, yeah, of course that's a fucking dystopian thing. Yeah,
yep,
throw that in.
Yep.
I tried and failed multiple times to write Soylent. I was I didn't have a Y, and I was like, I really want to write Soylent. That's like the perfect thing for this. So yeah, Leanne ended up winning that card. It actually didn't come into play massively. Like we were both trying to spell words for it, but it didn't kind of naturally come into it as much as we hoped it would.
Right. Okay.
But we've only done it once, so it might work out a bit better another time. But yeah, Paperback is still one of my favorite card games at this point. It's just stupidly easy to play. And the other thing I played, the other board game I played, we have also talked about in here before, is Splendor.
Yes.
Which is the one with all the poker chips.
That's right, yes.
Which is the main reason I bought it. And it was that thing where I bought it a little while ago and I hadn't actually used my physical copy yet. Like, I bought it a few weeks ago, or a month or two ago, actually, at this point, because I'd been playing the mobile version because of you over... Jesus, it was ages ago, because it was the game of the year.
Yes.
I downloaded the mobile version just after game of the year and then bought the game not long after that. And I played it physically with you before.
Yes.
We didn't finish that game, but I played it enough to know, like, I like this game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I finally got to play the physical copy and was playing with my girlfriend, who got super into it. And that game is... I've gotten to the point where I'm winning kind of consistently against the AI in the phone version of Splendor when I'm doing 1v1.
Uh-huh.
And losing kind of 50% of the time if I do anything above 1v1. So if I do like 1v2 or 1v3 or whatever. Or, uh-huh. Well, it's every man for themselves, but when there's more players in it.
Yes, yeah.
Playing against an actual other person, that game becomes so cutthroat. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
There's the point where you can see... There was a point where I saw... there was a card there that needed... I think it was like 3 black gems, 3 blue gems, and 3 green gems. And
yes.
Leanne had 3 black gems, 2 blue gems, and 3 green gems. I could see she was going for that card. Because it was the only one that needed black gems. And it's like, she's clearly going for that card. And one of the things you could do in Splendor... You can reserve it.
Yeah.
So I didn't need it, but I reserved it. I wasted a turn reserving it just so that she couldn't get it.
Yeah.
and it was just like, she was just so pissed off. She's like, what are you doing? I need that card. And it's like, well, I've got it. And it's mine now. Well, it's reserved. So if I want to buy it at some point, I'm going to buy it. You can't buy it. which is so cutthroat and so crazy. And there's lots of things like the second game we played, she basically held on to almost all of the black gems, just the tokens, for most of the game.
Right.
So I pretty much couldn't buy, she was buying things with them occasionally, but a lot of the times she just kind of had them.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't do it. I can't buy anything that needs black gems because I can't. So I was having to... It changes the way you play, because I had to start buying black gem cards.
Yes.
To buy things that needed black gems, because I couldn't pick up the poker chips because she had them all. well, not all of them, but you like most of them.
Yeah, because everyone has you've got a limit of poker chips that you can have. You can have a maximum of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which I've not... I think that scales down depending on the number of players. Or scales up depending on number of players. I'm not sure, but
all right, okay.
We never really hit that cap. Like we never found that there was a point where we had, the maximum number of chips we could have, because you end up having like a bunch of cards that also do the same thing and stuff.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And there becomes a point where there's no point in wasting turns, kind of picking up gems you don't need to stop the other player getting them, because you're you need to start buying things to get points quickly.
Yeah, there comes a point where you're not taking chips anymore, you're just buying what you can.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a point where often you'll just have, or at least we found, like, you'll have a lot of cards for things you need. Like, maybe you're aiming specifically, I guess we probably should slightly explain how this works to people, but look in the Game of the Year podcast from 2 years ago. There's like the nobles. The nobles are drawn to players depending on the cards they have. So if you have, you know, some of them be like, you need 4 red gem cards and 4 diamond cards. And so when you have those, the noble comes to you and you get the points from them. And so maybe that's, and that's kind of what people seem to, at least every time I've played it, is what people are kind of, it's one of the strategies you play at least, is you're building up your cards to get one of those to get the points.
Yeah, because it's easier to build, to buy a whole load of smaller sort of first tier gems that don't have any victory points attached, and then if you've got enough of them, you will automatically attract the nobles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then also by doing that, I found in quite a few games you can sometimes end up with a decent number of, you know, these gem cards that you were, you know, trying to get. To get the noble to come to you, and you'll be like, well, I've already got 4 reds, and a lot of the kind of tier 1 cards will only need like 2 reds and a blue.
Yes, yeah.
And you'll be like, well, if I just, you know, get a blue card, then I can buy all the ones that need 2 reds and a blue, and it's just, that's a turn. I don't even pick up chips anymore. I'm just using the cards to get more cards and using those cards to get even more cards.
That, yes, yeah.
And it's like this weird, it's not a deck builder. But it's kind of got deck builder elements to it.
Yeah, it's kind of an economic game.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's got deck builder elements to it because you're building up cards.
Set
with
collection.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, more of a kind of set collection. Well, no, because there's not bonuses for having sets, which is kind of a set collection kind of implies.
Yeah, it is. It's a rather strange abstract game that works really well.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I want every game to use poker chips for the resources. It's so good. Just they are all clacky and great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Splendor is also just fantastic. My girlfriend loved it, went and bought the mobile version as soon as we were finished playing it, and sat on the couch watching YouTube videos and playing that on her phone. Yeah. And I'm sitting there like, we have the physical version. I can play against you just now. She's like, I want to watch YouTube videos and play it on my phone. Like, fine then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good.
Good. Excellent.
I feel like I'm probably forgetting something, but I think that was mainly what I've been playing.
Well, we'll just do what we normally do. I'll get halfway through what I've been playing and you can remember what it was.
Yes. That's the way we do the podcast.
So, I've been playing a couple of things. What would you like to hear first? Would you like to hear video games or board games?
Board games.
Board games, right. Yeah. Okay, let's do that. So, one of the games that we did speak about this year at the Game of the Year podcast, and if you go to the website and you have a look at the Day 5 write-up, which we covered the board games, was Thunderbirds.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the cooperative board game from Matt Leacock. That's the designer of Pandemic.
I've still not played that.
What, Thunderbirds or Pandemic?
Thunderbirds, I played Pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I really like the game. And I backed it on Kickstarter. And I backed it at the level where I got the game plus all of the expansions that they were going to do. And they had, I think they had 2 expansions kind of fleshed out, and these are the things they're going to go to. But what they did is they added stretch goals as well.
Yeah.
So with all the stretch goals, we ended up with 3 solid expansions, and they kept adding things into the expansions. You know, so the first expansion, when you were doing the campaign, was essentially some component upgrades. And there would be some sort of, you know, little gameplay twist to add in to bring in these into the game.
Yeah.
And then just all of a sudden it grew arms and legs. We ended up with 3 expansions.
That's cool.
So those expansions are now complete. And
so is this just kind of the first one to show up?
No, what they've done is they waited, and they've got all three expansions are now complete. Kickstarter backers, I received, so I had an option of I could get my game with all of the expansions in one shot, or I would get my game and then they would send me the expansions once they're done.
Yeah.
So what arrived in the post a couple of days ago was this nondescript white box, and inside was all three expansions.
Oh, that's cool.
That they've done, yeah. So, but for a retail release, they're staggering.
Yeah, that makes
expansions.
Sense.
So the first expansion, I think, is going to be for Gen Con, I think, in America. It's going to come out then. It's sort of June, and then there's going to be one coming out in August for some other con in America. And the final expansion is going to come out in Essen this year. So they've staggered them quite nicely, and then everyone will be able to buy them.
So you're going to be walking around Essen going, I've already played that.
Yep.
I've already played it.
So if you're a Kickstarter backer, you got all three of them right now. So I played one of them. I checked out one of them. I'll run through quickly what they are. So you've seen the baseball game, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So I think we've spoken about it on the podcast, but essentially,
we have.
Yeah. So it is, you know, the main board is a map of the world, and it's split into segments, and you use the Thunderbirds and all their vehicles to travel around the world and solve crises.
Yeah.
And like, or disasters.
Yeah. It's like pandemic style, not pandemic, yes. But you know, it's that similar idea of you're traveling around the world to deal with an issue.
Exactly, yes. And on top of that, you've got the Hood, who is he's progressing forward in his schemes. He's got three schemes you're trying to stop. Should he ever get one of his schemes, should he succeed in any one of them, the game is over. If there are too many disasters, so if there's too many things that need the Thunderbirds help, and they get to eight of them, the game automatically ends, you're overwhelmed, and the game's ended. So again, there's so many different ways to lose, again, like pandemic as well.
Very much like pandemic.
Yeah.
We lost our game of pandemic just because we ran out of cards. And it's like, you ran out of time. Dead.
Yeah, so Thunderbirds, Matt Leacock has brought a lot of that into Thunderbirds as well. So what he did for the first expansion, which is called Tracy Island, he's brought in characters that were missing.
Okay.
So you can now play as Tintin,
Briggs, I know very little bit.
Or Parker. So they were kind of secondary characters from the show.
Which one is Captain Scarlet?
None of them.
Which one's in the submarine?
None.
What was the submarine puppet show?
Was that Tempest? No.
Maybe. That sounds better.
Yeah.
These are all things that were broadcast long before I was born, and then I got repeats randomly as I was.
Well, the same as me.
That's the thing. They're old shows. I have a weird kind of fondness for. I don't remember much about any of these really, but I have a weird fondness for them because they were like on when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, they're cool little puppet people. I like puppets.
So these are more the secondary characters. One of the characters is the chauffeur that drove Lady Penelope about.
Oh, right, okay.
Brains, he was the guy that invented all the little cool gadgets and things.
Okay, he was Doctor Who.
Yes, yeah. And Tintin was a
French kid. Had a dog called Snowy.
No, and he was Belgian.
Was he Belgian? Jesus, I'm messing everything up today.
Tintin was the granddaughter or the daughter, I'm not 100% sure, of the kind of butler to the Tracys.
Oh, right. Okay.
And she ends up, you know, she's quite handy and everything. She ends up becoming a part of the team, and she's got her own jet called the Ladybird, and you know, she ends up being a part of the team later on. But anyway, so you've got three extra characters, you've got three extra vehicles, or two extra vehicles, the boat that one of the boats that the chauffeur can drive, and Tintin's Ladybird, and you now have Tracy Island. So the way the game works when you're playing is it's possible for you to jump into all the different vehicles.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you may need, you know, a certain character to be in a certain vehicle for the rescue to succeed,
mm-hmm.
or to have a better chance of the rescue succeeding. So a lot of the game can be, you know, traveling to a certain part where one vehicle is, picking up another character to take them with you, or jumping into another vehicle and then continuing on.
Yeah.
Tracy Island now it's just a little model of Tracy Island, and it's got, I think it's six spaces where you can put the people onto Tracy Island. So it kind of stops the situation where you sometimes, when you're playing the game, you would end up with a vehicle stuck in the side of the map,
uh-huh.
which you're never ever going to get to again because you never need to go there. But the vehicle is now useless. Whereas now what you can do is you can drop people off. You've got a central hub now. You've got kind of like a bus stop, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So Tracy Island is a bus stop.
Yeah, sure. That's how I always pictured it.
Yes. So you can drop people off there and keep them there for safekeeping and things like that. One of the new characters, Parker, has an ability where there's two vehicles. So there's Fab 1, which is the pink limousine, and Fab 2, which is the new boat that you get in this expansion. He is able to remotely control them.
Okay.
So he can, for example, if he is in Africa and he is about to take a disaster, but he gets a bonus. He'll get a bonus if Fab 2 is in Europe, for example.
Uh-huh.
What he can do is he can, on his action, remotely move Fab 2 to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to be inside the vehicle, which is quite handy, and it kind of solves one of the little issues that you used to have before as well. One of the other cool things that the expansion adds is, if you ever seen the show, you had Thunderbird 2, which is the big green plane.
Yeah.
And it always had this...
kind of one of the more iconic ones.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, in the 5-minute sequence where, you know, they're always getting ready to take off, and the plane would come into a certain bit, and then there would be like a cargo bay that attaches to it, and there'd be little vehicles that drove into it. And those were the pod vehicles, and you had like a little drilling machine that was called the Mole, and you had the Domo, which was kind of like a crane thing with a conveyor belt on it, if I remember correctly. But you've got all of those little vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have little models. And what Thunderbird 2 does is it actually does have a cargo bay that opens up and you can put them inside.
Oh, that's cool. So do they actually like fit inside?
They do fit inside,
yeah.
Oh,
that's a cool idea.
So you can take two of them and you can pop them in Thunderbird 2 and you can travel where you need to and you can unload them.
You have to make sure you do that and you don't just pop them in and then leave them there and forget. And you're like, where the fuck is that vehicle? Where the fuck is it gone?
So you've got that... there are some more disaster cards. So what they did was they've taken the entire disaster deck, which is the disaster deck in Thunderbirds is basically the same as the infection cards in Pandemic. You know, so you've got cards in Pandemic. They're all the cards with all the names of the areas.
As they flip over, you put an infection on them. I assume it's just a disaster on them.
Yes, essentially, there's a disaster. It tells you where you go to resolve the disaster. So it's got the same ideas. But yeah, the decks are the more or less the same thing. And you also shuffle bad things into those decks as well.
Okay.
So you shuffle things that move the hood on his track. In the same way that you add what they called in pandemic infection cards.
Yeah.
Or epidemic cards, is it? But
it's one of the other.
One of those, yeah. So they've now redone the entire 56 card deck. Because they've added some new iconography and they've changed them so it incorporates the new vehicles and the new characters and things like that as well.
And is this all just part of the one of the expansions?
This is just one expansion.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so you're getting quite a lot of things. What this does to the game itself is you've got a few more choices with the characters because each character has a certain power. For example, John Tracy, who is the little dude that was always stuck in space. Uh-huh. I always felt sorry for him. The whole family was out having adventures and John's stuck in this space station in the middle of nowhere. And it wasn't like it was exciting because he was always sitting down. So John has, you know, if he gets +2 to any role he makes if he's in space, for example. You may have Tintin, who she gets an +2 to any role she makes if she's inside her the ladybird, her plane.
Okay.
So they all have different kind of powers that they have. Yeah, when you're playing, when that is your character.
It's quite cool. I like that in Pandemic as well, where every character feels like their own thing.
Yeah. So it adds that up. And it's just quite well balanced when you turn over a disaster and you can see what it is and you've got quite a lot of options. I still like playing this as a single player game. So I'll play it and I'll have 4 active characters and each one will take turns and, you know, you try and foil everything. It is very cerebral. You know, there's a lot to be thinking about when you play it.
Yeah.
So I've only played it as just a base game and using this one expansion, which is Tracy Island. The next expansion, which I'm going to try, which I'd like to try next, is called Above and Beyond. So this is the one that's coming out in, I think, in August. It comes with a couple of different things. It comes with the characters. You can now level them up.
Okay.
So now, you know how I was saying that you've got Tintin and her power is that she rolls an +2 if she's in her own vehicle?
Yeah.
That's her level 1 power.
But then she has like a level 2 power.
She's got a level 2 and a level 3.
That sounds quite cool.
Yeah, so
how it adds a little bit kind of almost RPG elements to it.
Yeah, so how you would level up your character is you can level up if depending on the number of players. So if there's 4 players, then she just needs to solve 3 disasters and then she collects the disaster cards and then can pay them as the cost to level up. She can do that up to level 3. There are a couple of other things as well. So they've added, there was other vehicles in the show and these were like special one-off vehicles that happened that, you know, they used for an episode and they kind of never seen again. And they called them disaster vehicles. So there was like special planes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Now on certain disasters now, with this new expansion, what you can do is, you now get a choice. Every time you finish a disaster, again, we've went over this on, you know, the first time we spoke about it. But when you finish a disaster, you get tokens. Essentially, tokens are the currency that you need in the game to either give you bonuses, and ultimately you need to pay some of these to file the Hood's schemes. So you can take the bonus, the reward that's on the card, or there's a secondary reward, which is one of these disaster vehicles.
Yeah.
And the disaster vehicle is a one-use vehicle, and it's very powerful. It's an overpowered benefit.
Yeah. You know, but you have to give up other things to get to it, essentially.
Exactly. So you can either give up the tokens that you may need, or once you know what the Hood scheme is, the tokens on that card may be useless and then you'll say, right, well, I'll take the disaster card because it may help me later.
There's like some degree of kind of risk reward.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so that's what it is. So you've got the disaster vehicles, you've got the leveling up. They've also added an epic level difficulty. Mm-hmm. So all they've done is they've added... the base game came with four different types of... four levels of schemes for the hood. So in any game that you play, there's three schemes that you need to solve. And if you're playing basic level or introductory level, you would have... a level one scheme, a level two scheme, a level three scheme. If you wanted to up that, you could mix it up. You know, you could have a level two, a level three, and a level four scheme. Epic level difficulty, they have added really fiendish schemes, and they've added up to level five schemes. So it just means you can up the ante.
Yeah.
This is it's a Matt Leacock game. It doesn't need epic level.
Yeah, it's going to kick your ass anyway.
Yeah. I find when I've been playing it, I'm about 50-50 with my win-loss rate.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it just depends on the first three cards that get drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's always that kind of random chance to some degree. But I do feel like his games are generally designed to the point where random chance might fuck you over, but you can usually come back from it if you nail it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can strategically do things to come back from things.
Uh-huh.
It's not just completely random.
Yeah,
I think I need to try and play a Thunderbolts game.
You do. The final part of this one, I think this will appeal to you, and I won't be able to use it until I get to play it with more people.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Crisis Mode.
Okay.
What Crisis Mode is?
It gives you a suit from Crisis.
No, unfortunately not. It's a sand.
Thunderbolts.
It's a sand timer.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's a timer that has 70 seconds on it. So in your turn, you have 70 seconds to take care of your three actions.
Oh.
Okay, you're not... Nobody in that... It's a co-op game as well, so during your turn, you know, same as Pandemic, everyone's going to be talking, and I think we should... I think I'm going to go here and here, and somebody might say, yeah, that's a good idea, but have you thought about this? And you discuss everything.
And this will just be forcing you, like, no, shut up, I need to do it now, so I'm doing this.
Yeah, you've got 70 seconds.
That'll make people so angry.
If the 70 seconds run out, the next part of the game happens, the disaster card happens. Yeah,
like, you've missed your chance to do it.
That's it. Yeah, if you've only done two actions, that's it, the other one's gone. What the game what it suggests in the rules, which made me laugh as well, is that you should let somebody, you know, somebody will be in charge of the little sand timer when they turn it over, and they'll give you warnings. You know, they'll say, oh, time's nearly up, or that's it, time's up.
Real proper Fort Bayard style.
Yes, yeah. but what what they're saying is, for additional drama, the player keeping an eye on the sand timer should chant 5, 4.
Oh, that's real good.
the guys that have made the game, Modiphius Entertainment, have done a fantastic job in capturing the entire thing with the Thunderbolts. Like it's really, really well done.
If nothing else, all three of these expansions sound like fan service.
Yes, yeah.
Like, they feel like something. If you really like Thunderbolts, you probably want those disaster vehicles. You probably want your little Tracy Island. Like,
yep.
You probably want this stuff because it's kind of cool, more... You know, Thunderbird stuff, and it seems like you're saying, like, they're kind of some of the more side characters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of not the biggest, you know, it's kind of stuff that fans would be interested in more than just regular people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
not that fans aren't regular people.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah, it is complete. The expansions are fan service, and the final expansion. So that was only two expansions I told you about. The third expansion is you get to add a fifth player to the game. So the game plays up to four players.
Uh-huh.
You can add a fifth player into the game, and he plays as the Hood.
That sounds pretty good. Did they do that in Pandemic as well? I'm pretty sure it's a Pandemic expansion where you play as like a mastermind that is...
Yeah, you kind of play as a saboteur. You play against... But
just Pandemic.
but this is slightly different because you're actually taking control of the Hood and you're stretching the game out a
Does the
little.
hood have his own little piece that you actually move him around the board and
He,
stuff?
yes, he does. He has his own. He has his secret mansion.
Does he have that by default, or is this just extra pieces added in the expansion?
No, that no, this is extra pieces
That's
that are
cool.
added specifically for when you play as the Hood.
Yeah, that sounds
So he gets his little mansion. He gets
cool.
his, I think it's a little boat and a little car or a little plane. Yeah, he's got a little plane and a little car. And if you ever watch the TV series, he, the thing that he always wanted to do was take pictures of all of the vehicles because he was going to. I don't know what his grand scheme always was. I think he was going to sell the information of International Rescue to people so they could exploit it and things like that.
Okay.
One of the pieces that you have in the game, so instead of like a character card where you level up, it's an old school camera. And you've got to put pieces, other pieces that you get if you achieve certain things are pictures of Thunderbird 2 and Thunderbird 3 and Thunderbird 4 and stuff, and you put them on top of the camera.
That's quite cool.
Yeah, again, it's just pure fan service and it's lifted straight from the show. The disaster cards themselves are all episodes from the TV show.
That's awesome.
Really, really good game if you like Pandemic or you like Matt Leacock's style of game, which is, you know, you against the game. It is a really, really good game. Enjoying it a hell of a lot, even though when it kicks my arse, I was playing last night. I played two games last night. My first game, I got beat before I got a chance to get past the first scheme. So in to compare that to Pandemic,
Destroyed.
I got obliterated before I could cure one of the four diseases. Just absolutely destroyed. So
It sounds fun. It sounds like something I'd like to play.
it's
That
a
I do like Pandemic. I like Matt
Forbidden
Leacock's other
Island.
games. Yeah.
Yeah,
Forbidden
Forbidden Desert.
Forbidden Desert more so than Forbidden Island, but yeah, both of them are great.
Yeah. I do like his that you know that style of game, the quite the brutal style of game. It's really
Yeah.
good. So yeah,
Very good, very good.
we'll need to get a game of that as well.
Yeah, definitely. We need to have board game day in general.
Definitely. Yeah.
We
So
say this every time, but we
I
will do
know.
it someday.
We will. We will. On the video game side, I picked up a game for review. So when Ben was on the podcast 2 3 weeks ago, I think it was, and I was talking
Four
about,
weeks ago.
yeah, oh yeah, it could be, but I was talking about a Nintendo DS game that I picked up. It was Atari's Greatest Hits. Yep. So just one of these compilation discs, quite an old one. I think I had a version of it before, but I seen it. It was a couple of pound in CEX. I picked it up, and it's got 50 classic Atari games, most of them for the iconic 2600 console, which is fine. So yeah, we spoke about that at the time, and I got a message from Ben last week, Thursday or Friday, I think it was. I've got a game, the perfect game for you to review. I said, right, okay, what is it? Thinking, you know, that he's went and got me Trackmania, he's got me something nice. He got me Atari Vault.
Oh, fantastic.
So we received a copy of Atari Vault for on Steam.
So you're doing separate reviews for every single game included in the collection?
Oh God.
It
So
seems
here's
like the
the
sensible thing to do.
it would be, yes. So here's the thing. It's a collection of 100 games. Atari Vault is 100 games. I think the it's roughly 20 games are maybe not even that as many as that, but say between 15 and 20 of them are the classic arcade games.
Okay.
So you've got Pong, you've got Super Breakout, you've got
Oh, like proper classic.
Crystal Castle, you have Asteroids. I think they've got the sequel to Asteroids in there as well. They've got Battle Zone, which is the one with the tanks,
When's
and Lunar Lander.
Oh, yeah.
A Lunar Lion.
I can
Heist.
never remember which one's Atari. Are they all Atari owned things?
Yes.
I know those ones are Atari owned. So you won't see things like Pitfall and stuff in there.
No, no.
Because so that's I think Activision still owns that.
That was Activision, yeah. So I was going to come to that. So that's the kind of the arcade games, and then they've got, it must be close to 80, 2600 games.
That sounds like a lot of games.
It is, yeah. So you've got a lot of things. So one of the I think it was a pack-in game with the Atari 2600 at one point was Combat. Combat was a two-player game, and you could fight. So the console itself came with two joysticks, and you basically play your friend, and you could play as tanks, or you would be in aeroplanes or helicopters.
I think the planes one is the only one I played.
Right, and you would basically try and batter each other. You managed to shoot them, then you got 1 point, and you know if he shot you back, he got a point. You'd play for the highest score, and it would be for a certain time limit. So you would play the game, shooting each other and trying to avoid each other. Then when it got close to the end, the scores would flash on the screen, and you knew you were close to the end. So you would try and get a couple of last minute kills in, and then that was it. Game over. I got the highest score. Hey, well done. And then you would try again. So you got Combat, I had very fond memories of that game. There's things like Yar's Revenge. Mm-hmm. There is Night Driver. There is all the real sports games that they had. So there was tennis, boxing, volleyball.
So all the kind of notable things.
Yes, yeah, there is also quite a lot of shovelware because, let's face it, every console in the history of consoles had shovelware.
Yeah.
You know, there was stuff that maybe they thought was good and they just kind of put it out. The Atari, once the Atari 2600 launched, there was a point where they couldn't make games quick enough. So they were just coming up with... there's 3D tic-tac-toe, for God's sake. You know, that is a game. There's drafts, there's chess, there's hangman.
Oh, if that drafts is the one I'm thinking of, it's magical. You should play it. Because I only know about most of these games from... I mean, like, I know things like Yar's Revenge because they're, you know, really well-known and stuff like that.
Yes, yeah.
Or, I guess, to some degree, if you're into games, you might have heard of it. But, like, I wasn't around... I wasn't like playing game. I wasn't alive during most of that time period.
No, you weren't.
Atari was before my time. But I played and watched a lot of these games in Game Room when Microsoft tried to do that a few years ago.
Oh, yes.
And they had a version of Drafts in there, which I think is this one. But, you know, it's you against the AI. And the AI requires, you know, computational speed that the Atari 2600 did not have to decide what move it was going to take. So the screen goes black every time it's deciding its turn while it thinks about it. And it's fantastic. It's just like,
oh man, I'll need to check and see if that's the one.
How does it handle, I don't know how much you mess about it, but Combat would be a good one for it. Like, how does it handle, I forget, the little switches that let you decide the game modes and stuff is...
Right, so the way that the interface is, it, for most of the games, works really well. So I've been playing with an Xbox 360 controller. Because, you know, if I've got a Steam game that uses a controller, that's the one... Excuse me, that's the one that I use.
Yeah.
So what you would do is, when you start the game, you know, the game screen comes up and it's full screen. Well, it's not full screen. It's 4x3, and there's a border around the, you know, the edges of the game, well, the edges of your computer screen. It's, which is kind of standard for, you know, arcade ports and things like that, which is fine. But when you want to get to the controls, so when you want to get to the little console with the wood around it, you push the select button. And it comes up, and you can then use your D-pad to move along the little toggles.
Okay.
That's cool. So you move to the little toggle, which the select game, and you can, you know, select all the different games, or you can change the difficulty, A or B, because there were some games where, Pong, for example, it was tennis on the Atari 2600 rather than Pong, or Pong Sports, where, you know, you flick the difficulty A or B and it made the paddle bigger or smaller.
Yeah.
So all of those things are still fully functional. They work.
That's cool.
You can do the if you remember, the Atari 2600 had the little switch for black and white and color.
Okay, no, I didn't know that.
It did because, you know, obviously we had at that time, not everyone had a color TV. So it was easier to switch it to black and white, so it just made everything monochrome, so you could see it easier. It's still got that black and white and color switch, so you can flip it on some games and turn it to black and white.
It's nice that that's in there.
So that's quite good. The games are, they're fine. They're very good translation of them, I think, because some of them are still brutally hard. I remember some of them being quite difficult at the time. Night Driver, for example, was a bugger of a game. Once you got used to it, it was fine. But the way Night Driver worked was you ended up with a car and you were on this road and the bends are incredibly tight. Mm-hmm. And the only way for you to work is the minute you push the button down, that's your accelerating button and the screen comes towards you. If you take your finger off, everything freezes. There's a bit like Super Hot, actually. You know, there's a car, it's going to hit you, but you haven't pushed the button, so it's not there. So the minute you push, you have to turn to make sure that it comes flying past you and doesn't hit you. But at the same time, you don't drive into the barriers.
Yeah.
Extremely difficult game, and it's a faithful conversion. Works really well.
Well, it makes sense. Like, a lot of the games at that time, like, there was an era when arcades were the big thing.
Yeah.
So even like home games were still being built by people that were making arcade games. So
yeah.
They were making games that were designed to be hard to steal all your money.
Oh, yeah. And then there was things that I think there's things like Adventure as well. Adventure, again, is another game like Yars' Revenge that everybody knows about.
Is Adventure the one with the eyeballs?
Yes.
Your character's just little eyeballs that float around.
Yep.
Yeah. I think I played Adventure during game room stuff.
So there's quite a lot. There's quite a few of the kind of sort of adventure games as well in there. Now, the thing is, this game is made by, is it Code Mythics or Mythic Coders?
I have no idea.
I forget their name. I'm actually going to start up the game. Now, these guys have been doing this for a while. So the 3DS, the Nintendo DS version that I have that I picked up a little while ago, that is from 2010. Okay.
Okay.
The
same guys?
Same guys, Code Mythics.
Oh.
Okay. So they've been doing this for ages. It's got the same games. So these same 100 games on the Nintendo DS, they brought out a Volume 1 and a Volume 2.
Yeah.
Both games add up to the 100, more or less, I think. There may be one or two variances. But what I'm trying to say is all of these games, we've seen them in compilations before. So if you have the compilations, you can get it's not called Atari Vault on iOS or Android. It's called something else. I think it's called Atari's Greatest Hits.
Yeah.
But it's the exact same games, and you can get them on your mobile device or a tablet. So they're already there.
I wonder if this is the first time that it's came to PC, though.
I wonder
why, if it's been out in other things for so long, why it took so long.
I think so. Now, so that's fine. One of the things, if I had to give you a negative about this game so far, I would say it's missing things. So it's there's certain things missing. There's things like E.T. I would love to have seen E.T. here.
That's probably missing for a reason.
Well, there's an obvious reason, but things like Superman as well, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark was a good game. Superman, not really. E.T.
I've seen footage of Superman. That Superman game is it's sickening to watch.
Yeah.
If you're watching someone play it, I'm sure when you're playing it, it's weird, but I've only watched videos of it, and it's like, if someone's playing it, you're just constantly kind of switching screens, and colors are just constantly flickering everywhere, yeah. And it's nonsense.
Yes.
But
those are probably missing because of licensing issues.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
You know, there is also all the Activision games that are missing. I'd love to see
like Pitfall and stuff.
Pitfall, Kaboom, Keystone Capers. Yeah. Things like that. There's the Apollo
Pitfall games are definitely the ones that jump to mind for me always when I think of those kind of games, because Pitfall is like the one of those games that I put a decent amount of time into.
Yeah. Also, the Apollo games, things like Lost Luggage.
Okay.
They're missing as well. Now the Apollo games I can understand, because I think Apollo went bust, so those games are kind of hanging about in limbo somewhere. You're never going to really see them again. But Activision. Code Mythics brought out a compilation, Kieran, you'll remember this, for PlayStation 2 called Activision Anthology.
Yes, I think I do remember that.
Yeah, I had it for the PlayStation 2. And it's all the most of the Activision games they brought out for the 2600. And it had like an 80s soundtrack. It had Aha and Duran Duran playing in the background when you played.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I'm not too sure why they couldn't smush the two together if they've got the license.
Yeah.
And again, Activision Anthology, you can pick up in your phone. You can get the thing for, it's 40 Activision games, and you can pick it up on iOS and unlock it for a fiver.
Yeah, you would hope that if they are doing both of these, you know, kind of anthology things, that they would eventually do, you know, like the Comixology thing. Like for a long time, you can still download the Comixology Marvel app and the Comixology DZ app.
Yeah.
And eventually they were just like, fuck it, if you download the Comixology app, you can download DC and Marvel Comics. But it took a long time before they got to that point.
Yeah.
Even though they were making apps for both of them. So you kind of hope that they would get that together, especially because, again, Game Room, to be fair, that had Microsoft behind it. And I'm sure if Microsoft comes knocking on your door and is like, motherfuckers, give us your license for your games, they're probably like, yeah, right, fine.
I liked Game Room.
Game Room was a great idea. I don't think it made much money.
No, I don't think it did.
And to be fair, maybe part of that was that Microsoft spent a bunch of money paying Activision to let them put Pitfall on it. You know, like, it could be weird shit like that.
Yeah.
But let me ask the handful of, well, like, two, basically, Atari games that I know, other than the ones that have been mentioned so far.
Yes.
Tell me if they're in it.
Yep.
Warlords.
Yes.
Okay. I forgot the name of it now. The Wild West one.
Oh, the Gunslinger?
Is it Gunslinger? Sure, Gunslinger.
I am actually scrolling through these. Just to have a look.
I'm looking up now. Also, Missile Command.
Outlaw. Is that the one?
Yes, Outlaw.
Yeah. Yeah, and Missile Command's on there, Outlaw's on there, Pong Sports, Night Driver, like I said, Asteroids, Millipede, Centipede.
Oh, cool, yes.
Human Cannonball, Hangman.
So a lot of the ones that are there are largely ones that you would recognise. Or at least the ones you would recognise are mostly there, like the Atari-owned ones.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
And then anything that was owned by anyone else is meh.
Yeah.
Keep it as cheap as possible, don't pay money for licensing.
I think so. There is a couple of issues with the thing, though. There's a couple of games that don't work.
Like at all?
So there's one of the games that uses the paddle controls, and I think I made some notes about this as well. So there's a game called Race, and it's essentially it's a car and you're two-player game and you race against the other person and you're trying to race through a maze. The Atari 2600 had two controllers, so it had the joystick as we know it, and you know the little one that we know and love.
Yeah.
It was the joystick in the middle of a big block, and it had one button. The other controller that they had was the paddle. That was the big round spindle in the middle of it, and it had a big orange button on the side of it. They had other controllers later on, ones that allowed you to input text and numbers and things. But those were the two kind of controllers that came with the game. Race is a game that uses the paddle, so you need, you know, it uses, you could basically turn that paddle or the spindle 360 degrees to turn the car, you know, to get it to move.
Yeah.
I can't get that game to work.
That's...
Yeah, so I can't get the... I can accelerate, but I can't turn the car. So I've tried looking in the controls and everything, and nothing seems to work. I've tried switching to keyboard, mouse, nothing's working. There's a game called Desert Falcon that crashes when you try and load it up. It crashes the entire system.
That is insane.
Yeah, that's...
This and that's mad. Every time you load up, it was like consistent, just that.
Yeah, consistent.
You think at the bare minimum, the thing they would do would be open up every game, make sure it runs.
Yeah. So the and then there are other games. So there's a game called Human Cannonball and Breakout. Breakout's a good one. Breakout was another game that used the paddle.
Yeah.
The game works, you can play it, but the controller doesn't work as well when you're controlling your little paddle down at the bottom. It's quite difficult. And also,
I remember Game Room had similar issues with things that use paddles or trackballs.
Yes. Missile Command is fine. The game you were talking about, asked if it was Outlaw? On here. No.
Warlords. Oh, yeah. Warlords was...
Yeah.
Is Warlords not a trackball?
Warlords was paddle.
It was a paddle.
Yeah, Warlords was paddle. So that one you have problems with as well. Especially when you're trying to, you've got your little man, and basically he moves on a 45. It's like an L-shaped board, and when you're trying to sit on the corner of it, it is very, very difficult to do so.
That using sucks.
Yeah,
because Warlord is a really good multiplayer game.
It is. Yes. Yeah.
This is probably asking a lot. I take it doesn't have any kind of... I assume it has local multiplayer, at least.
It has online as well.
Really?
It does, yes.
That is surprising.
Yeah, it has online multiplayer. So the game has just had a patch, which I was downloading as we've been recording this, and I've switched the game on so we could look through some of the games and just say what games are there. Mm-hmm. They broke it. I kid you not, they broke it. On the menu screen I'm looking at right now, they changed resolution, so I had to find the resolution which brought it back to full screen, because it opened up in a window.
Yeah.
And it now has serious tearing going on. That's weird. It's got these black bars and they flicker across the screen.
That's weird.
Down the one side of the screen, it's tearing. They've broken the menu system.
Like, this is just PC games.
You know what? I can understand that with some of them, but we're talking about games that came out...
No, yeah, these are old games that you can find good emulators of online really easily. It's not... They're not different. There are web browser versions of most of these games.
Yeah, and the other thing is that there are far better versions of these by the same guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm all for patching things and fixing things, but these guys have had the license for these games for, as far as we know, at least 6 years.
Yeah.
Now, Activision Anthology, I'm pretty sure that that's older than 2010. I'm pretty sure that came out maybe 2008.
Well, you said there was a PS2 version, right? That's
Yeah.
way older than this.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking like early 2000s.
Yeah. So, we're talking at least 7 or 8 years that they've had these licenses and they've been churning out different versions of these. So it's a little bit... I'm going to be struggling to kind of recommend the Steam version at the moment.
Understandable.
You know, and hopefully they're going to patch this thing as well. But I've still got a couple of more games to have a look at and things, so it is quite... It will take a little bit of time to try and, you know, get a... give the thing a good once over, so...
Yeah, I'm just
Yeah. The last game I'll talk about, and I'll talk about it quickly. I wanted to... I was going to spend ages talking about it, but I'm not going to because we've been running on, was Hyrule Warriors Legends.
How are you liking it?
I am really, really liking it.
It's a fun game.
It is. It's a really good game. So, for anyone that hasn't played it, Hyrule Warriors Legends is... it's the 3DS version of Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah.
They have added a few things into it. So, is Linkle in your version?
No, Linkle is exclusive to the 3DS, and I'm jealous. Female Link.
Yeah, female Link.
I want female Link.
Well, here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
I've got my version. I also have here a download code that if I pop it onto my Wii U, it will give me all the new content that's on my 3DS. It will transfer it onto the Wii U, so you can play all that new shiny content on Hyrule Warriors and the Wii U.
That's cool. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I wonder if they're also selling it then. I wonder if there's like a DLC pack for it, because that game has a lot of DLC.
Ah, well, I know that this version as well came with all the DLC.
Yeah, so you'll have like the there was Majora's Mask stuff and I forget what else, like Link the Past stuff.
Yeah, the game comes with Toon. There's Toon Link.
All the Wind Waker stuff.
Yep. There is the Majora's. What do they call him? Skull Kid.
Yeah. I'd be tempted to buy that DLC pack.
Yeah, and then there's the whole thing with Linkle as well.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I am really enjoying it. I am. I don't think I'm that far as well. I'm not too sure how large the game is, but the missions are kind of they're bite sized. Mm-hmm. You know, you can play. I think the time limit on them is like 60 minutes, but you can finish them within 30
What's
minutes.
What's the I don't know if they changed much for the 3DS one other than adding more content. Like, I assume you're playing through the story mode.
Yeah, so I'm playing through what they call the legend mode.
Okay, so what is the kind of story of that been for you so far? Because I wonder if it is different from the Wii U one or if it is just the same story mode. And...
Oh, okay. So the story, it seems to be wanting to kind of tell, you know, a Legend of Zelda game. Mm-hmm. So it starts off and you're in a palace and you see Zelda's, you know, in her castle, and she's looking over the troops and everything, and she sees somebody down. There's a mysterious force. What's he called? Ciro?
I don't know.
It's a purple mist.
Yeah.
There's a purple mist, and it's a long forgotten evil, and it's going to take over Hyrule.
Of course.
It's coming back.
I think that's the same story as
The
Wii U game. I think it's just the same story mode, and then they'll have added like extra stuff for the other stuff.
Yes, yeah. So you from that kind of that's the main story, and your first mission is Zelda has been kidnapped.
Uh-huh.
So you team up with a character, and I forget her name now.
The blue haired.
No, that's Lana. Her name is Impa.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, sure.
Impa. Yes, yeah. So she is kind of the captain of the guard.
Yeah.
And you are, well, you can choose to play whichever character, but there's Impa.
Kind of, it recommends every time. Yeah, like, yeah. You should play as Link during this one. You should play as Impa during this one.
Yeah, so Impa and Link go off and you're battling in your first episode. Then you come across Sheik. Sheik shows up. And then you come across a blue-haired girl called Lana.
Yeah. She's not a Zelda character. She's new for that game. For the Wii U one.
Right, okay.
She was...
Yeah, so that's as far as I've gotten there. And then I went off and I done a new mission that you wouldn't have played with Linkle.
No, I won't have.
So it gives you a little story about Linkle. Linkle comes from a village. And she's, you know, she's heard about the invasion and she's off to go and help them. And she's got a little bit of a... They've made her a little mischievous, a little bumbling and things. She is going off and she runs into this little impish character with a mask. And she runs into Skull Kid.
Oh, right, okay.
so the whole Majora Mask thing.
That's cool.
And he has stolen something of hers. And so
that's what he does.
Yeah. So basically the mission that you're playing there is you're fighting various enemies and... you're trying to find Skull Kid and beat him up to get the thing that he took from you.
Especially the story of Majora's Mask.
Yes. so I've played 1, 2, 3, 4 missions. I've got into the leveling up system where you buy the badges and things like that. It's really, really good.
It's probably my favorite Dynasty Warriors game outside of the Empire games. I like that kind of strategic layer that the older Empire game used to have.
Uh-huh.
But just in terms of a like kind of raw hack and slash through a silly story kind of thing, is adding the Zelda kind of character and stuff to it helps quite
well. Yeah. So there's a free mode and adventure mode I haven't even looked at yet.
Adventure mode's quite cool. It's like a bunch of challenges on a kind of, assuming it's the same, it's a bunch of challenges and it's split up on a kind of
8-bit
map like the original Zelda. It's a cool thing.
Yeah. So
I didn't play too much of it, but I love the idea of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that looks quite good. And there's a section that's still blanked out called My Fairy. I don't know what that is. And then there's the gallery, so there's lots of collectibles.
Yeah, there's a shitload of collectibles in there.
Game looks super good on the 3DS as well. It takes advantage of the power of the new 3DS if you're playing on new 3DS. So you can play it on any 3DS you wish, but you can only play it in 3D on the new 3DS. The stereo, what do they call it? Is it stereoscopic or monoscopic? Whatever they call it. The 3D only works on the new 3DS.
Yeah, I guess I understand that.
Yeah, the game looks really, really good, you know. So yeah. I think, I've seen it on the Wii U, and the game is no slouch. And
yeah, it's pretty good. It had frame rate issues on the Wii U as well, though. The thing.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember you saying if you were using on this on the gamepad. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're playing on the gamepad, it runs all terrible.
Yeah. I've not seen much here. It does.
It was more some of the later levels where there's a lot going on. It might kind of.
I think what they've done here, Kieran, I have found it sometimes, is that they've got sort of pop-up it's not like ugly pop-up, it's kind of you'll be playing the character and you'll run into a swarm of enemies and you'll take them out, and it doesn't look like there's anyone behind you until you use the joystick to turn the camera around. The way that you're playing the game, the camera's not always behind you.
Yeah.
You know, so you can switch. When you flip the camera around to get behind you again, so you can see what's essentially in front of you, but you can't see it, then all of a sudden these enemies. So I think what they've obviously had to sacrifice having loads of enemies on screen.
Yeah, and then just kind of pop them in when needed.
Yeah.
That's kind of classically how Dynasty Warriors games have worked. There wasn't a lot of that in the Wii U version. The Wii U version kind of just was like, here's a shitload of enemies and mash buttons. Yeah.
It, like I said, it's not jarring. And listen, you're playing it on a handheld.
You have to accept kind of something.
Yeah, it does look really good, and it is. I haven't thought, oh fuck, that's not fair, or you know.
He just showed up and killed me.
Yeah.
It'll mostly be the fodder enemies anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like all Dynasty Warrior games, the fodder enemies are just there to be hit. Like, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, so I am really liking that game, and if you don't have Hyrule Warriors, pick it up. Pick up Hyrule Warriors or Hyrule Warriors Legends.
Or pick up both, apparently, and get all the DLC.
Exactly, yes. I was at one point once I'd seen it, and I thought, oh, I might pick it up on the Wii U, and then I thought, no, well, I don't really need to. Because if you're getting all, you know, you're just getting the same game, it's just on a bigger screen.
Yeah, and I bet it doesn't have, because it's a Nintendo system.
Yes.
Will not have any kind of cross save capabilities.
Probably not, no.
Which is,
They're
still a bit behind on some of that stuff.
Yeah. It does, it's one of the few games that uses the amiibos.
Yes.
Yeah, so
it sounds like the support is the same as it was on the Wii.
So what you do is you can pop your amiibo on your 3DS and you will get a mystery reward. You can use any amiibo, even the brand new ones that have come out. Doesn't matter, doesn't have to be a Link or a Zelda, or it doesn't have to be from the series, it can be anything. You get a random reward. The only thing is, you can only redeem 5 of them a day, but you can say you've got 5 and 5 only amiibos. You can do 5 of them, all 5 of them today, and then you can do all 5 of them again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you get a completely different random reward as well.
I did that like twice and then stopped because all of them were like, you got 5 rubies. Yay. It's like, I don't care. I don't need 5 rubies. It's useless.
I did 3 of them and I got weapons for 3 of them. Then I got 5,000 rubies. And then when I did Mario the Miserable Bastard, I got 1.
It's a bad luck.
It's a me, horrible fast.
Yeah.
Bastard. So really liking that, and I will probably be playing a lot more of that as well.
Understandable.
How much more content is there?
There was quite a lot of content in the Wii U version.
Yeah.
And assuming it has all of the DLC, there was a lot of DLC. And then they've added like Linkle, and I think actually the Wind Waker stuff might only be on the new 3DS.
I think so.
There's a couple of things. The Link's Awakening stuff is only on new 3DS. I'm not sure if that may actually be DLC for the new 3DS version. I'm not 100% sure. Because I think they are doing a new round of DLC for that stuff as well.
All right, okay.
I could be wrong. I could be misremembering things.
Well, it says here the extra download code. It gives you. You've got Link code. There's Toon Link. It looks like a Link who's meant to be a pirate. He's wearing like a little blue waistcoat, and he's got a sword and a pistol. Is that Link?
It may not be Link. That might be Tetra from Wind Waker. She was, spoilers for Wind Waker, she was Princess Zelda.
All right, okay.
But she was a pirate. She was the coolest version of Princess Zelda.
You also get a new weapon for Ganondorf. There's some big burly dude who's wearing a crown. He's not really burly, he's just fat. Some king dude.
He may also be. Does he look kind of cartoony?
Yes, he's kind of got like a square jaw.
He may be like the Wind Waker version of Ganon. He was a kind of bigger dude.
Ah, right. And then. I like how you say.
I'm kind of just guessing. I can't see any of these. I'm guessing characters based on your description. If I looked at them, I'd be able to go, that's that guy, that's that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd know all of them. What I meant was, I like how you went. He's kind of like a bigger dude, just in case he heard you, you know.
Yeah, Ganon's a scary fucking guy. I don't know.
And then there's Skull Kid as well.
Okay. Nintendo's confirmed the Link's Awakening character playable in Hyrule Warriors called Marin, who is one of the characters from Link's Awakening. I can't remember actually. It's been a long time since I played Link's Awakening.
Right, okay.
Is the second DLC for Hyrule Warriors, or second Hyrule Warriors Legends DLC for 3D. This is really weirdly worded. It's coming out in summer.
Right.
And I assume you have to pay for it. It says there's also going to be add-ons themed around Phantom Hourglass and A Link Between Worlds. So they were coming some of the portable games.
All right, okay. Yeah, because I don't think there's any add-on content yet for it, but...
Yeah, it looks like there's going to be some.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. I would like to see Link's Awakening stuff. Phantom Hourglass, whatever. I don't really care about Phantom Hourglass. I don't really like those DS Zelda games very much.
Right.
But they'll be very... It's weird I've only said Phantom Hourglass and not Spirit Tracks, because it'd be nice to see Spirit Tracks, Link gets a train. And he's like a train conductor.
Right.
So a train conductor Link would have been pretty cool. But hey, can't get everything.
Oh, here you go. There is the Legends of Hyrule pack, which gives you Master Windwalker pack, new adventure mode, and 16 fairy clothing items.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So you can pick up so that's going for £13.49, but you can pick up a 3DS and Wii U version for
£15.29. Oh, so they're going to start doing the Smash Brothers thing.
Yeah.
That cost me a lot of money, because I kept buying all the Smash Bros. DLC across both. Hey, I can play as Bayonetta whenever I want, all those times I play a 3DS version of Smash Bros.
Yeah. So I can tell you just quickly, and then we'll do some news, what's on here. So it says this add-on pack includes the Master Windwalker pack, which is a new adventure mode map. Wind Waker, sorry.
There's probably like Zelda fans shouting at their
their
iPods or... Yep. No one uses iPods, iPhones.
There's the Link's Awakening pack.
Yeah.
A new character, weapon type, adventure mode map, and 3 special battles. There's the Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks pack. Again.
Oh, so there is Spirit Tracks now. Okay.
Yep. There's also a Link Between Worlds pack. And Wind Waker Robes costume for Ganondorf, available immediately. Oh, right. Okay, so I think this is a season pass by the sounds of it.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, because if it's specifying that the Wind Waker robes is available immediately.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, the content will not be payable before the release date of each respective pack. Yeah. So your $13.49 is a season pass.
That's not bad.
No, I suppose that's
so much more reasonable price.
Cool. Excellent. Well, that is everything I've been playing. What have we got for news? Have we got anything that you want to discuss?
I opened up a bunch of stuff. Give me a second. So there's a couple of little things, important things, like Two Worlds 2 and Two Worlds. Do you ever play them?
Didn't that win an award for the worst fucking game on...
I'm sure it won a few.
But it won one from us as well, I'm pretty sure.
No, that was Risen.
Oh, Risen, yeah, it was.
A disaster. Was it Risen 3? One of the Risen games was a disaster.
All right, okay.
Or I'm sure they all were. Two Worlds is also fucking terrible. They're really bad Oblivion clones. And they are Oblivion clones. They're that old at this point.
Right, okay.
But developers announced that they are making a third one, and it's coming out. I wonder if this is just like a really early April Fool's, because this news came out yesterday. It's like, why would you do this? Yeah. They're releasing DLC, more DLC for Two Worlds 2, which is crazy, because, again, that game is old. And it's not a very good game. And then they're making a sequel that is going to come out in a few years. Like, it's not even coming soon. It's, like, in a couple of years.
Right.
It's nuts. They would even announce this. But, hey, it's a thing. I was going to say the Sony closing Evolution thing, but I think we actually talked about that last week.
I don't know if we did actually.
I think we mentioned it last week because it happened before the podcast last week.
Yeah.
So we must have. As we are speaking, there's a Final Fantasy 15 event on where they're announcing the release date. But the release date also leaked out beforehand. So it's coming out on September 30th.
Right, okay.
I'll probably get that. I liked the thing. Apparently there's supposed to be a demo coming out tomorrow as well, which I wonder if it will just be the exact same demo that came with Type Zero.
Right, yeah.
Which is a good demo, to be fair. But I would like to see, you know, a different part of that game. Uh-huh. If it's, you know, a massive RPG, I'm sure they could easily throw together something.
Cool.
I don't know. It seems weird to be slightly excited for Final Fantasy game again after the 13 trilogy was such a, you know, disaster. But
yeah,
you know, it'd be interesting. How much have you been following the Homefront series? I use series in the loosest sense because there's only one game so far, but there's a second one coming.
Right, okay. I'm listening.
The first one was a really bad first-person shooter.
Yes.
The second one is by different developers, first positive part, is being made, it's been in development for a while now. It was originally being made by Crytek UK,
uh-huh.
Which was what they were called at the time. You may also remember them as Free Radical.
Right.
They are now called Deep Silver Dambuster Studios because Crytek sold them to Deep Silver at some point, apparently.
Right.
Which I had no idea about. they've been making Homefront The Revolution for a long time at this point.
Yes.
It's supposed to be coming out this year in a couple of months or so. It looks pretty rough from what they've shown. There was a beta not long ago that looked pretty rough, but they announced that there's going to be it's weird, they announced or it may have just been that people played it at some point. I don't understand why they would announce this, but it's an Easter egg in the game will allow you to play two of the levels from Time Splitters 2.
Alright, okay.
So you can play the first two levels, which is Siberia and Chicago.
Cool.
Which is interesting. I mean, if you've got the Time Splitter license, you might as well throw that stuff in there.
Yeah.
I'd rather just make the new Time Splitters game, because Time Splitters is great, but...
Mm-hmm.
Hey, whatever. The Spicy Horse. Let's go ahead and end that there, because it's a cool name for a studio. You may know them as the people that made the Alice Madness Returns and the first Alice game that I've forgotten the name of. It was just American Beauty's Alice, actually.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
There was rumours going around that they were shutting down last week, but they've confirmed that they are not actually shutting down, but they are cutting a lot of their staff. Recently, in the last few years, like, their website has basically become like a portal. Like, they're based out of Shanghai, and it's basically become a portal for kind of free-to-play games and like a lot of kind of Chinese developed like free-to-play things and things like that, and they made their own a couple of free-to-play games. Like I reviewed I can't remember what it's called now, that Diablo clone that they made that was like a Japanese twist on Red Riding Hood.
Although
it had none of that actual story in it when I played it.
Oh, God, what was it called? I know the one.
It's like Akinoro or something like that.
Was it not Fan... I know the one.
Yeah, well, that game. They made that. That was free to play for a while and had really horrible microtransactions and stuff. But yeah, they've cut down their team. They said that they're ditching free to play. They're switching. It says it's time we pivot to something new.
Oh.
I hope that they make something more similar to the Alice games. They don't have the license for Alice. EA owns that.
Right, but yeah.
I'd hope that they make something similar. Like, Alice Madness Returns is a really good 3D platformer. And it would be really awesome if they made another one of those, even if it's with a different theme. Like, I'd love a new Alice game, especially, because, again, Man of Strons is fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it was a different theme thing, as long as it's good.
Cool.
You liked Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor, right?
I did, indeed.
It's a really good Assassin's Creed / Batman game set in
Yes.
the Lord universe.
Yep.
We didn't give it Game of the Year, did we? We just gave it... It came high on our Game of the Year list.
It did.
So, unsurprisingly, because it was such a major success, it seems like it's getting a sequel.
Okay.
Leaked from a stunt woman's resume, apparently.
Right,
she put down that she did mocap for Shadow of Mordor 2.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I guess that's a thing. Yeah, I'd imagine we'll probably see it at E3.
Cool.
I'm interested in that. I'd happily get any ones.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of... we talk about this, like, it seems at least once a year, where BioWare sends out their fucking survey for a game that isn't actually properly announced yet and then just talks about it.
Yes.
What
have they done this time?
This time, Mass Effect Andromeda has already been announced, so it's completely different.
Right.
But they, yeah, they had a survey that they released that has a bunch of stuff that basically points to that. The exact phrasing they said was, experience the freedom to traverse and explore a planet-dense but seamless open-world galaxy. So the idea is going to be a bit more open world, flying around, you know, exploring different planets.
Okay, right, I can live with that.
Yeah, I just want more Mass Effect at this point. It's been so long. Three was so long ago.
Yeah.
And then the PlayStation Plus and Games with Gold games got announced for next month.
Yeah, this was quite good.
The Games with Gold one in particular is like, yeah. You probably know better than me, but I assume that Games with Gold works the same way as PlayStation Plus, where if you subscribe for a month and claim the stuff, then when you subscribe again in a few months' time, you have that stuff.
Correct.
Okay. Because I'm tempted to subscribe for April so I can get Sunset Overdrive for the Xbox One.
Yes.
And Saints Row 4 for the Xbox 360, which is insane because that has a Xbox One release.
Yes.
It seems crazy. You can also get Dead Space. I was going to say Dead Space 3, but it's just the first Dead Space. Which, to be fair, arguably the better Dead Space.
Yeah.
And, well, actually, not arguably. Like, Dead Space 3 is garbage. And also The Wolf Among Us.
For Xbox One.
So, I'm trying to read the way they break this up, because Xbox Games of Gold always does their weird thing. So, Sunset Overdrive will be free between the 16th of April and the 15th of May, and The Wolf Among Us will be free for the entirety of April.
Right.
And on Xbox 360, Dead Space will be free all month, and Saints Row 4 will be free from the 16th to the 15th of month.
All right, okay.
I might subscribe to... Can you claim these online, like on PlayStation Store?
I'm not 100% sure.
Maybe
worthwhile just checking it out.
Yeah, because I'm going to buy an Xbox One at some point, and Sunset Overdrive is one of the games I desperately want.
Yes.
So, yeah. The PlayStation Plus stuff is... I'm going to open the blog post instead of this news post, because it's better laid out. Usually is, at least. So, there is Dead Star for the PS4. Which is a new release. It's described as a fantastic team-based space shooter meets RPG.
Right.
It's by the guys at Armature Studio. So those are the guys that made... They're a bunch of ex-retro guys, so they worked on the Metroid Prime series.
Okay, and right.
Also, they made... What did they make? They're making ReCore. Remember that really cool...
Oh,
CG
yes.
Trailer thing that was from a while ago.
Yeah, with the little dog.
Yeah. And they've done a bunch of other little things as well. But nothing major. This is kind of one of their kind of first, like, own games. They've done, like, a bunch of porting work and stuff like that. It looks kind of cool. It looks like a kind of twin stick space shooter. It looks pretty.
Okay.
Zombie for PS4.
Oh.
So the re-release of Zombie U.
Yes, yeah.
Will be free. Which is supposed to be alright.
Yep.
Not really played that. I didn't like what I seen of it, but
I've got it for the I really do like it. I like the kind of roguelike elements that it has. Yeah.
I got it with my Wii U and I've just not put it in.
Oh, you know. You should.
I need to. Yeah, I will. I'll probably download this one as well. For the PS3, Savage Moon, which is ringing a bell, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, that does.
Savage Moon is an action strategy game in which you must defend the remote mining site. Oh, it's like a kind of tower defense game.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Yes, yeah. We've had that before.
No, you're thinking of...
No, we have.
Have we? Did we maybe get the Vita version or PSP version before?
We got the Vita version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew I recognized the name. And on PS3, again, we have I Am Alive, which you remember as that really bad survival game.
Yes.
Where dust has killed everyone. And there's dust. And it had cool ideas, and it was kind of murdered by the fact that The Last of Us came out like a year or so later with... Actually, I guess a few years later. Jesus Christ, this came out in 2012. I guess it wasn't murdered by this stuff. But like a lot of the ideas it had, The Last of Us ended up doing and doing correctly. Because this was the game they were like, you know, bullets are going to be really sparse, and if you point a gun at an AI character that doesn't have any bullets in it, you can kind of intimidate them because they'll think there's bullets in it.
Yeah.
Which The Last of Us had, and that worked in The Last of Us as well. It was good, but it didn't really work in that game. It's not a good game, is what I'm saying.
No.
Interesting. And on PS Vita, we have A Virus Named Tom, which there's a review on Camden Tom for. I can't remember if people liked it.
I don't even know what that is.
A Virus Named Tom. It's a game.
All right.
It's like a puzzle game, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a puzzle game. It's like a... It's... Shit, I forget the name of this style of game. You know, like the BioShock hacking minigame?
Oh,
you got to redirect all the pipes?
Yeah.
It's like that, from the looks of it.
God. Yeah. Fantastic.
I think it was supposed to be alright, though. And I don't know how you pronounce this. It's Shuchimi? Which is on Steam as well, actually. I'm Googling it to see what it is.
Right.
It's a weird shooter thing with a like fish, like a goldfish that gets really fucking buff and starts shooting things. And
oh, yeah, I'm sold.
It looks kind of cool, actually. I might play this one.
I think Xbox One's taking it this month.
Yeah, definitely. Like having Sunset Overdrive on there is killer. Like PlayStation Plus hasn't really had any big PS4 games for a while. There's like a lot of good indie games. Like I'm not complaining about it. You know, we get good indie games.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sunset Overdrive is a big game.
Yep.
You have to wonder if it'll start pushing Sony's hand on it, but I doubt it.
Yeah,
that's the only news I've got here, except for the PlayStation 4K rumors.
We don't
need to go into rumors.
Nah.
Rumors and speculation. We do not. Clutch Free Gaming does not comment on rumors and speculation unless we're interested.
Exactly. Cool. Just looking to see if there's anything notable to say that's coming out soon. Knights of Azure is coming out from Koei Tecmo.
Yes. Anime boobs.
Anime boobs.
I don't think that one's particularly boob heavy, but it is anime ladies.
Yeah.
It's like anime lady. From what I saw, it's like a mix of like Dynasty Warriors and kind of Monster Hunter kind of mission structure.
All right. Okay. It's,
I don't know. It looks interesting.
I've seen this one. Yeah, it looks quite pretty actually.
Yeah, it looks alright.
Yeah.
Not as pretty as the game under that on the list.
Yeah. Dot Rani.
That's not the one I meant.
Quantum Break.
You skipped one.
Oh no! Stop talking about it. We're not talking about Trillion God of Destruction again.
Boobies.
Boobies.
If we get a review code for that, I love it.
But yes, Dirt Rally's coming out.
Yes.
Next Tuesday, so probably the day after you've listened to this.
Or day of.
Yeah.
Depends where it goes up.
Yeah. What else? Oh, Mario and Sonic are coming back.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah. This time they're at the Rio 2016 Olympic Games.
When are the Olympic Games?
2016 in Rio?
Rio's not a time period, but sure, 2016, yes.
Yeah, but no, I said 2016 in Rio.
Okay, sorry. But I asked when.
In 2016, okay. In Rio.
There's...
Aren't they normally June, July?
Yeah, probably. I don't really follow Olympics. I always download, like, the... You know, BBC always does their app for consoles that's like, here's the thing that you can watch the Olympics on. I always download it and never watch it.
That's about it.
That's not it. There's one more game on there that's coming out April 8th that is one that I have pre-ordered. It's called Nitro Plus Blasters Heroin Infinite Duel, or Heroines. Sorry.
What is that?
It's a 2D fighting game. I don't know any of the characters. The characters are all... Well, actually, that's not true. I know at least one. The characters are all, like, girls from, visual novels.
Right.
The only one I recognize is Saber from Face Day Night, isn't it? Or Face Day, I guess. Face Day Night was the anime. But it looks like a really solid 2D fighting game. A lot of people... it came out in America few months ago and it got really good reviews. People were like, this is the genuinely actually quite a really solid fighting game in its own right.
And you've pre-ordered this?
I've pre-ordered it because it was £20 and I like
really
games. It looks quite cool. It's worth taking a look at least.
I can see that you can pick it up for like £25.
I think it's still £20 on 365 games. Which, honestly, 365 games and the game collection are my kind of go-to places for pre-ordering things these days.
All right.
Because they tend to be cheaper and they tend to deliver before the release date.
All right.
Like, it was the game collection I pre-ordered The Division from, and it came out on the Tuesday, and they delivered it to me on Saturday morning.
And
I was like, I can't play this because the servers aren't up till Tuesday. This is the one time that getting a pre-order early is useless.
Yeah. Dark Souls as well. Dark Souls 3 is coming out soon as well.
Yeah, it's April 12th. That's the week after. There should be another podcast up by then.
Yeah, there will be.
Well, around that time. There's that kind of limbo period of there might be a podcast up by then, there might not.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see if there's anything else worth mentioning. Star Fox Zero, that hasn't been delayed yet.
I don't think it's going to get delayed. They've been shown the special edition and stuff like that.
Oh, have they? Right. I'm still torn between that one.
I have no interest.
No way.
I heard from people that the latest footage they've been showing looks a lot better. But I was never a big Star Fox fan anyway.
Right. See, I'm still hankering for decent space combat.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Let's play more Rebel Galaxy.
Yeah. I'll have a look. I'm not going to buy it blind faith.
Yeah. We're just looking a bit forward then, Ratchet and Clank's out.
Okay.
Is Star Fox Zero Rush, I think.
All right.
That game is looking crazy good. Like, graphically.
Uh-huh.
Because I was kind of skeptical when they were first like, oh, we're going to remake Ratchet and Clank. It's like, okay, so we're going to get a PS4 game that doesn't look very good because it's a remake of a PS2 game. Early PS2 game. And then they were like, no, it's going to look like a PS4 game. And then they started showing gameplay of it, and holy fuck, it looks like a really nice PS4 game. Like, it looks gorgeous. I don't know when that movie's supposed to be coming out. I suppose soon, given that the game is coming out.
Right.
Because, they're doing a Ratchet & Clank movie. And this is the game tie-in to the movie, which is based on the first game.
Right.
Yeah. Street Fighter the movie game.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, Quantum Break, I'm still debating whether I'm going to pick it up when it comes, you know, whether to pre-order it or just wait.
Yeah, there was actually a news story about that that I didn't open, about the file sizes for that stuff. You know Quantum Break has, sorry, there's going to be really loud typing for a second. You know Quantum Break is, you know, part game, part TV show, part, as they describe it. It's got, you know, the live action stuff.
Yeah.
So the episodes, the live action parts of it that they call episodes, by default you stream them, so you need an internet connection to be able to view them.
Yes.
And they stream like a Netflix episode or something.
Right. Okay.
If you want to download them so you can play it offline, or so that you can, you know, not have to rely on your internet connection to stream this, and I'd assume the video quality is probably a little bit better as well. You can download them all. And the episode pack is 75.61 gigabytes.
Jesus.
Pretty big. To be fair, it's, from the sounds of it, it's a lot of HD video.
Right.
Like, when you think that, if you think, like, a movie takes up quite a lot of a Blu-ray.
Yes.
You know, and this is, I'd assume probably a bit lengthier than that, depending on the size of the game. Depends.
Yeah, yeah.
How many, like, if they have more than a couple hours. I don't know if they specifically said, actually. So the episodes are about 20 minutes. Actually, they might not be specifically part of it. Maybe a thing. It's not mandatory to download the episodes, as you can stream the videos online when you play the game. Remedy have said in the past that watching the 20-minute episodes are not mandatory to understand the story of the game. However, they'll give you more background details to the characters of the game. So I guess the live-action things that are part of this, like, main game story are kind of on the disc, and then the episodes for, they're like extended story things, essentially.
All right, okay.
75.61
games. My God.
Oh, so big.
Yeah. I'm curious. I think this might be one, you know, that I could actually play this with, you know, with my fiance. But I think, you know, it'd be one of those you can do the story bits and then you can watch the episodes together. Yeah, and like
exactly.
That. Yeah.
I'm interested in it because I like Remedy games. I like Max Payne.
Alan Wake.
I liked Alan Wake. I really liked Alan Wake, actually. I'll be the weird guy that likes Alan Wake more than Max Payne. Like, I really liked Alan Wake. And this looks kind of like Alan Wake with time powers, so, I mean, that sounds good to me. I like Alan Wake. I like time powers. We'll see. Cool. My PC won't be able to handle it, is the thing, so it will have to wait until I eventually buy an Xbox One or upgrade my PC. So, it could be a while.
All right, I think, yeah, that's it. Is there anything we missed? Have we not, something we've not talked about? Or
The Oculus came out, but neither of us have one. So.
No.
VR. People seem pretty underwhelmed with that launch lineup of games.
Even with, you know, Sony's VR, I'm sitting on the fence.
I might pick up PSVR. From what I've heard, if you haven't pre-ordered PSVR, the odds of getting one this year are low, because they sold a lot of pre-orders. But yeah, starting next year, I might get one.
Cool.
I'm interested in that.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's it then. If you want to send us a question or comments or anything, if you want to send us questions about Story About My Uncle, which we're going to be discussing next week in detail, send us an email to podcast@glitchfreegaming.com. You can find us on Facebook, just search for Glitch Free Gaming. You can find our page, leave a question there, or you can tweet us at Glitch Free Game. And we will pick that up and we will use it in the show. Yes. So that's pretty cool. Excellent.
Yeah.
Once again, thank you all very much for listening to our drivel now for 141 blinking episodes.
Yeah.
And a few Game of the Year specials and
EGX
specials. And
as a special reward for that, now me and Mike are going to talk for another hour about how bad Batman vs. Superman was.
Yes.
Fucking terrible.
Rotten.
It was so boring. That was an hour. It might not have felt like it, but the movie certainly felt like a few hours.
It did indeed. So, but before we get lynched, we better get out of here. See ya.
I don't think we'll get lynched. Everyone hates that movie. But goodbye.